and good morning to the department, and good morning to the SOE Transnet, and to our guest. We are all welcome. May I have an indication of the attendance? I have one of Mr. Swart, who is going to be in and out because of the Justice Committee meeting as well, Portfolio Committee meeting.
Madam Chair, I've received an apology from Mr. Mare and Ms. Manzoni. They'll be joining us after 10 o'clock. They are delayed.
Any further apologies? No apologies from the minister. Want to believe that it's a cabinet meeting today? Yeah. Members, as we have all received the agenda, I take that the apologies are accepted to the committee, and now we are on item 3, the briefing by the department and the Transnet on their annual report and financial statement for 2016-2017 financial year. DDG, would you like to introduce the subject?
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, good morning. As requested by the Portfolio Committee, today we have Transnet SOC Limited in the House to present the 16-17 annual results. And with the team today, we've got the Chairperson of Transnet, Ms. Linda Mabaso. We also have the Group Chief Executive of Transnet, Mr. Sabonga Gama. And we also have the Group Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Gary Peter. And accompanying the colleagues, we also ensured that we request the Chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee, particularly on issues that may want to be further explained, particularly around some of the findings within the annual report. We've got Mr. Khadebe as part of the board of Transnet that would be joining. And accompanying them, Honorable Chairperson, are the other colleagues from Transnet that will then assist the executive team together with the leadership of the board in answering some of the questions that the board has. I'm sitting here, Chairperson, maybe perhaps I need just to raise it on behalf of the Director General. He's not feeling well, but I'm currently the head of the transport enterprises. I do oversight on Transnet. So I believe that all issues that affect this entity in question today, I should be able then to support the committee to find resolutions and answers to the questions that they'll be asking. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for that introduction. And I would take that even if the DG was well, you would have been expected maybe to accompany the minister to the cabinet meeting.
Precisely, Chair. That's correct.
These are early days for the minister. So we note those apologies. Let me welcome the board of Transnet, led by the chairperson, where I think we had an engagement on the first engagement with the board, but it's the officials, the top management, the group executive, and the CFO that were unable to attend due to other prior engagement, but we noted that the CEO did send a delegation and appreciated that. Having said that, my name is Lungi Mnganga Tabashe. I'm introducing myself to you, CEO and financial officer, because you are not in that first engagement, which was led by the minister, the then minister, Lynn Brown. Having said that, you are most welcome, and let me allow you to chairperson for the vote to lead to the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, committee members, and thank you for allowing us today to come and present our financials. As the representative of DPE has announced, we have our team here. I don't know if I don't have to let them introduce themselves individually. It's fine.
I think because it's really our first engagement as the entity and ourselves, especially for my benefit,
yes.
I can introduce you. Can add it. I'll appreciate the introduction. Thank you.
Thank you so much. My name is Linda Mabaso, Chairperson of Transnet.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. Good morning. My name is Siyabonga Gama. I'm the Chief Executive of Transnet.
Thank you, through you, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members. My name is Gary Peter, the CFO.
Good morning, honorable Chair and honorable members. My name is Nombizelo Tsukudu, GM in Group Finance.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Seth Khadebe. I'm the Audit Committee Chairperson of Transnet.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Sihle Mkhwanazi. I'm the Executive Manager in the Office of the Group Chief Executive.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Mvozo Zenzile from DPE, from the Office of the Minister.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Cleopatra Shiqega. I'm the GM in the Office of the Group Chief Executive.
Good morning, Chair and the committee. My name is Noctula Kumalo. I'm the Group Company Secretary.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. Once again, I'm not hiding the people that just happened to be in front. I'm not hiding from you. I'm from Public Enterprises. My name is Lebohan Dwambe. Thank you.
Don't mind, can you shift to the other seat? Is that an empty seat? Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. My name is Moladwani Dikgetse. I'm responsible for communications.
Thank you, Chair. At the department or ESCOM?
At Transnet.
I mean Transnet. Oh, ESCOM is on my
Thank you, Chair. There's another member who's coming. She took a flight this morning, Miss Sishi. She is the head of HR. She'll be joining us also. Her flight landed at 8. Thank you. Without further ado, I will hand over to our GCFO, Mr. Gama.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Chair of the Portfolio Committee of Public Enterprises. We are here today to present the annual report and the financial statements of Transnet as at the 31st of March 2017. I think granted the that event normally takes place around September, so we are probably 6 months in delay due to scheduling issues. But nevertheless, I think it's almost always appropriate that we come and account in terms of the financials to indicate to you what happened in that period. We are almost now also to the end of the current financial year, which will end on the 31st of March 2018. I think before we present the actual financials, we need to preface this within the context of what is currently taking place within the SOC sector in the country, because we can't pretend that there are no issues that are currently unfolding within the sector. We have had occasion in the very recent past to also engage with the other committees within Parliament, and I think the key issues within the SOC space at the moment has been quite a lot of issues around project management and poor project management from SOCs. And Transnet is not immune to those issues, especially issues relating to contract management and deviations. And I think we have been dealing with some of those issues and basically looking at the diagnostics and what has been the root cause of some of these issues and how we are going to move forward. There's also been weak accountability mechanisms and lack of consequences. So as a management, we are engrossed in terms of dealing with those issues, but there's also been lapses in corporate governance, as well as procurement irregularities. And I just want to address myself to some of those issues before we start with the actual presentation. to give the committee a progress report in terms of where we are, and to try and give some kind of status. You will be aware as a committee that around July 2017, they emerged a number of media reports and allegations, especially relating to third parties that are earning commissions as a result of contracts that they've entered into with Transnet. The allegations were that Transnet would enter into a contract with an entity called Supplier One. And as a result of that contract between Transnet and supplier XYZ, there would be a third party, call them Commission Agent One, who would be paid some kind of commission as a result of the contract between Transnet and that entity. And that, that's been happening in the period between 2012 and 2015. As a result of that, the board and the management has been seized with this matter, and we have reported all of these allegations to the justice agencies in order for them to investigate and also to assist us, because these have given Transnet a very bad name and a very bad reputation. And this is something that we need to make sure that we deal with so that we can clear Transnet's name, but also importantly, if there are bad apples within Transnet, that those apples can also be eliminated from Transnet so that as we move forward, we make sure that everything that happens is appropriate, because the reputation of an entity such as Transnet is quite critical, especially because we have to borrow funds in international markets and also in domestic markets. Transnet does not benefit from any government guarantees. It needs to be able to stand on its own. We do have an unqualified audit report which indicates that our financial position as stated is appropriate and that it is clean. But however, we have learned of this procurement irregularities. And we began also a process internal to Transnet to begin to identify all of the different entities that that were mentioned in the media reports. Some of these entities, or let me say most of them, they do not have any dealings with Transnet itself. but some of them do have dealings with Transnet. We've started investigations and we will be starting now to report outcomes of some of those investigations. Some of the investigations are likely to be prolonged because as the forensic auditors work on some of these, they indicate that there's some additional work that needs to be done so that we can try and uncover the extent of these allegations. In as far as the financials of Transnet they are correctly stated in terms of the manner in which they've been dealt with. But what we want to do is to make sure that no procurement irregularities persist. Make sure that everything that we do can restore the fundamentals in as far as Transnet is concerned. So there's a number of entities. I would want to say, Chair, that probably at an appropriate time, very soon, you give us an opportunity to, in whatever manner that you deem appropriate, that we can begin to share the outcomes of those reports, because most of them are about 90%, 95% complete, so that we can share firsthand with yourselves before we go into the media to say this is what the findings are and this is the actions that we are taking as a result of that. Some of the investigations and as far as some of the entities like Regiments, McKinsey and Trillion, those ones, there's a separate process that the National Treasury is seized with in terms of those forensic audits. And I think it's welcome because it's also good to have a third party dealing with those and not just auditors that are appointed by Transnet, but that are appointed by other parties. The 1064 as well, the board has been dealing with that particular matter itself. The chair of the audit committee, Mr. Seth Kadebe, is also here. He can probably also indicate and provide during this forum maybe an update in terms of where that process is, because that one is being dealt with by the board itself. So in accounting to Parliament, which is democracy in action, I'm going to ask the CFO to take us through some of the numbers in terms of 2016-2017, but before I do so, I'm just going to give you a high-level summary in terms of what happened. So if you who's got the... Okay, just try. Yeah, thank you. So in terms of the high-level summary, up to 31st of March 2017, revenue increased by 5.3% to 65.5 billion rand, underlined by a 4.9% increase in the general freight volumes, 2.4% increase in export coal, railed, as well as a 24.3% increase in railed automotive and container volumes, and a record 12.1 million tons transported for manganese. In particular, Chair, I want to indicate that we are seized with a road to rail migration and a market share play in the general freight business, where we would like to see Transnet having a 30% share of that GFB market. We're currently sitting at about 24%. We're hoping that by 2020, Transnet can reach 30% market share. This is the space which is highly, highly contested between us and the trucks. And I think you would see quite a lot of trucks in the road, but I can also say that inch by inch, we continue to make progress in terms of retaining and growing our business in that space, which is why you would see, despite a GDP growth of less than 1%, Transnet was able to grow at 5.3% overall during that period. We also have become quite frugal in our approach, and you'd see that where the CPI was 6.8%, we contained the growth of expenses to 5.6%, which means they were contained and they only increased up to 37.9 billion. Despite a 10.1% increase in electricity costs, as well as a 7.5% increase in personnel costs. We, on top of the 6 billion that we had saved in the year earlier, we saved a further 2.4 billion rand against planned costs last year. Our EBITDA, which is earnings before interest, depreciation, and finance cost increased by 5% to 27.6 billion rand, which was 7.1 times higher than the SA GDP growth of 0.7%, which I've already indicated. Profit for the year increased 600% from 393 million a year earlier to 2.8 billion rand. The gearing, which was at 44.4%, and the cash interest cover at 2.9 times are well within our loan covenant requirements. The company continued to be strongly cash generative from operations, and that increased to 32.8 billion rand, which is a 16.4% increase to prior year. Borrowings raised were 17 billion during the year, and during that same period we repaid 24.9 billion rand that we owed, which reflects the strength of Transnet's balance sheet, which means that a net impact of that was that some 7 billion was actually repaid during that period. If we go to the next slide, Bui. Capital investment was at 21.4 billion rand, which brought the total capital investment to 145 billion rand during the period. We have now accepted some 452 locomotives into operation since the inception of the locomotive acquisition contracts. We continue to focus on operational improvements, resulting in a 14.9% increase in group operational efficiencies, 1.2% increase in energy efficiency. Also, our disabling injury frequency rate at 0.69 is well above the world-class benchmark of 1, and we've outperformed our own target of 0.75. However, during the year, there was an increase in fatalities, and we have significantly enhanced our focus and efforts in this particular area, and we can report that in this year we've seen more than a 50% improvement in those matters. In as far as supplier development and local spend and triple BEE, we punched above our weight, and we were able to attain 103.1% of total major procurement spend as per the DTI codes. 3.1% of our personnel costs was invested in training, which continued to focus on artisans, engineers, and engineering technicians. We also invested some 234 million rand in CSI programs across South Africa. We run the Transnet Foundation, which is a professionally run entity. That looks at, other than healthcare, which is supported through the Pelo Pepper, we're also involved in sport, we're also involved in youth programs, we're also involved in education programs. In the main, we assist orphaned people, but also we assist different people that approach Transnet to assist them, and we make sure that we have a proper audit trail in terms of all donations and sponsorships that we make. But in particular, we try and make sure that we have an impact, and through the foundation, we have people that audit those programs and make sure that money is spent in the manner in which it is spent, and most of them are required to give annual reports to Transnet in terms of the work that they've done. But our people also go and assess and assist, and we do that across all provinces within the country. Chair, I will ask our CFO to then talk to some of the numbers in order for us to just also get a sense of what has happened in the past 5 years up to now, which gives a very good indication, a very good trend line, that despite some difficulties, especially in the commodity markets, Transnet has continued to provide stellar performances to try and assist us as a country to make the kinds of investment that creates jobs, but importantly to make an important impact in terms of our developmental state objectives. Mr. Gary Peter will take us forward.
Thank you. Yeah, through you, Chair, looking at slide number 4, we're looking at the 5-year review. And as Sia mentioned, I mean, this is, actually gives you a good snapshot as to where Transnet is over a consistent period of time. And the volumes you can see, even though we have commodity price slumps and volatility in the markets, Transnet has generally been quite consistent. And especially on general freight, you will see that the makeup of general freight, as was mentioned in the opening, shows that there's constant increases in railed containers and automotive. In fact, in this financial year, we increased by 24.3%. And that shows you that that road-to-rail market share is actually positive. It's a success story, and we are gaining that market share year on year. We'll get into the volumes and the operational performance in more detail. Also, what we'll be discussing will be sustainable development outcomes around HR, around safety, around our community development and transformation and empowerment. And we'll also highlight in more detail some of the financial performance numbers. But just to give you a snapshot, if you look at the revenue and the EBITDA is your earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization, and that is a good indicator of your profits and your cash flow generation capability. You'll see that our revenue and our EBITDA over the last 5 years has on average grown at about 7%. And generally for a large infrastructure company, you expect EBITDA to grow at between 4 and 5 times GDP. And you can see that we've been doing that. And in fact, in multiples.
Can you give me a full name of EBITDA?
It's earnings. Earnings before interest, tax.
Okay, wait. Earnings.
Earnings before interest.
Before interest, tax.
Depreciation.
Tax.
And amortization. And amortization.
And amortization.
Yes. Amortization.
Amortization. Okay, I'll get there. I'm still in grade 1 for Transnet. Thank you.
But really, for investors, EBITDA is quite an important indicator for your profit generation. And we also then just want to highlight that we've been growing at around 7% on average, even during tough economic slowdown, which also shows you the market share generation. So the capital that we're investing is working. One thing we also wanted to highlight was you can see on capital, although we at 2015 made some key decisions as a board, we decided that we need to go and validate customer demand in more detail. So instead of just creating capacity ahead of demand based on idle promises, it was actually to go to our customer base and say, well, if you're going to be increasing capacity, tell us and put it in writing by signing a take-or-pay arrangement. We will then ensure that we get the capacity in time. And during that period, you obviously had commodity prices slumping, especially in iron ore and coal, and steel prices, and you found that a lot of the mines were then pushing out or deferring their capital expenditure programs, and therefore Transnet did exactly the same. So Transnet still invested significantly, but capital you saw reduced in the 27 year from 29 billion down to 21 billion. But what's important is we have invested 145 billion since MDS, the market demand strategy, started in 2012. And you can actually see it in our total assets. Our total assets are at 351 billion at the end of the year, And the number for 2012 isn't on the sheet, but it was actually 178 billion. So in the 5 years, we've doubled our asset base as an organization, which is significant. And it shows you the stimulus we've been putting into infrastructure development in our country. But what's even more important is that in total borrowings, you see that we've actually decreased our borrowings from 2016 to 2017, from 134.5 billion down to 124.7 billion. That's a decrease of 7.2%. And that's important because Transnet is a net borrower. And it's important that we generate enough cash to look after ourselves. As Sia mentioned, we take pride in the fact that we don't want to rely on government guarantees. We want to help pick the sovereign up, not to pull it down. And during these tough economic times, we really are focused on cost reduction, working capital management, and capital optimization, so as to ensure we generate enough cash to be able to reduce debt, not increase it. And lastly on this slide is the ratios. The ratios are very important to our lenders, our investors, the bankers. Where you look at our leverage ratios, our EBITDA margin is healthy, but gearing, which is an important indicator of our ability to borrow, and cash interest cover is sitting well within our loan covenants. And just to explain to the committee, when you are a net borrower investing in a counter-cyclical investment strategy such as Transnet, and when you don't rely on government money or any money from the fiscus, you obviously will then generate cash, but you will be investing and you will need to borrow for any excess. These ratios have loan covenants attached to them in our loan agreements with our lenders. And if you breach those loan covenants, the lenders will then come to you to ask for a government guarantee or a prepayment. And our loan covenants for cash interest cover is that we must be above 2.5 times. And you can see we currently have 2.9 times. But we must be frank with you and transparent and tell you that from MDA's period, you see that the cash interest cover was actually reducing. And in actual fact, in September 2016, it was at 2.6 times. So it was very close to that loan covenant. And that's why we made those decisions in 2015 to reduce our costs significantly, to optimize our capital and look at new areas of business. And that is actually starting to bear fruits now. In fact, I can mention to the committee, even though this is March 2017, that when we released our half-year results in September, cash interest cover further improved to 3 times. I also want to mention that gearing is also a loan covenant, and we cannot be above 60%. At March, we were at 44.4%. And in fact, in September, we were at 44%. So all we want to highlight here is the leverage ratios are solid, and this is what the rating agencies look at in terms of your ability to pay your debts. So, Chair, if you'll allow me, I'll just move into some finer details.
For my sake, just unpack that gearing. I'm not asking questions, just a clarity because I understand as we move along.
Yes. So the gearing is a leverage ratio that many lenders and banks use in our loan agreements. And they use it as a covenant that says that you cannot breach above a certain level. And it's basically the amount of debt you have versus your equity. And if you've got too much debt, then there's obviously a problem because they worry whether you can actually repay that debt. So they want to keep it below the level of 60%. And we are at 44%. So there's a lot of headroom to be able to borrow more.
To add there, if you look at the total assets of Transnet, you're sitting at about 356. And then if you look at equity, when we say where the gearing is at 44, in terms of the lenders, it means we can go up to about 60% in terms of the the covenant that we have agreed on. But internally within Transnet, we've said we will only borrow up to 50% of the equity that we have as Transnet to always make sure that we can meet the asset test, we can repay all our short-term debt, but also with the 3 times cover in terms of cash, it means we continue to be healthy sort of going forward. So it's an important aspect because the bankers don't only want to know your willingness to pay, they also want to understand your ability to repay the debt.
So if we move on to slide number 6, all we want to highlight here, we've already gone through the percentage numbers. But on the bottom right of slide number 6, we highlight that when we started MDS, we thought that the 2016-17 year we'd have GDP growth of 2.8%. But we know now that we only had 0.7% in quite a subdued economic growth cycle. But one thing that's important is we wanted to highlight that even though Transnet's profits increased by 5% against 0.7% South African GDP, our sector GDP actually contracted by 0.1%. So we've outperformed considerably against our sector. Our sector comprises of agriculture, mining, transport, manufacturing, and electricity. Moving on to slide number 7, when we deal with our revenue, she has mentioned that revenue grew by 5.3%, but the untold story is that Transnet also provided price reprieves to our customers to the value of 600 million rand in that financial year. And in fact, in the previous financial year, we gave price reprieves well over 2 billion rand. And this is our approach to assisting entities with a large employment base to ensure that during tough economic cycles that people stay employed and job preservation is key. So we would forego some of our profits to ensure that we help these organizations survive in tough times. Our revenue increase would have been above the 5.3% had we not done that. Additionally, September results showed even more improvement in revenue. In fact, the September half-year results we released were a 13.8% increase in revenue. So we've gone from 5.3 up to 13.8, even in this tough economic environment. Also, CEO has mentioned that general freight has grown nicely, which shows you that that market share play is working, and that is also key to our investors. Moving on to slide number 8, operating expenses, a very big focus area for Transnet. In fact, in the previous financial year, we saved 6.6 billion against planned costs. We then took those actual costs and we re-baselined all our budgets. In other words, we didn't allow our divisions just to look at the last year's budget plus 10%. We said, no. Work on your saved amount. Work on the amount where you tightened your belts. And let's do a new budget based on that. And even with that tight budget, we were able to save 2.4 billion rand, if you look on the bottom right of that slide. Where we saved that was through moratorium on filling of vacancies and limiting overtime. Why must we pay overtime in areas where we don't have the volumes? We'll pay overtime in the areas that we are outperforming. Also, reducing professional and consulting fees was a very big focus area, and that has reduced substantially. We've limited discretionary costs, such as travel and accommodation, and other costs, such as printing, stationery, and telecommunications. But while we are proud of this percentage increase, is that 5.6 is below even CPI. CPI at the time was 6.4, which is obviously higher than 5.6. And given the fact that Transnet has such a big fixed cost structure, the savings obviously are quite difficult to achieve because you have 65% of our total costs are based on electricity and personnel costs. So you only have that 35% margin that you can really try and squeeze to try and ensure that you get savings. So the 2.4 must be read in that context. On to EBITDA, our earnings, page number 9. Without the price reprieves, our percentage would have been 7%, not 5%. And I can also report that in September of 2017, our half-year results showed an impressive 17.7% increase in EBITDA. And we believe that this year's year-end results will show similar significant increases. We also have improved our EBITDA margins up to the half-year of September. But looking at the right pie diagram of our contribution of EBITDA, I just want to spend 1 minute here because this is quite important, especially to the international and domestic investor community. TFR, which is Transnet Freight Rail, responsible for the transport of our bulk goods, and also they own the network, the actual railway. TFR represents 57% of our earnings. But within TFR, we have various take-or-pay agreements. Now, take-or-pay agreements are these significant agreements, especially with large mining customers, where we agree that they must take a certain volume of tons, or they must pay if they don't reach it. But also, it keeps us honest in that we have to also push those volumes if they've got it. Otherwise, we get penalized. So, for TFR's volumes, 65% of TFR's volumes are on take-or-pay. And that means you get a guaranteed rate of return, even during volatile cycles. If you had to take that as a percentage of the total group EBITDA, it's about 37%. Then I want to draw your attention to TPL. TPL is Transnet Pipelines, responsible for transporting gas, petroleum, and crude across a network of 3,800 kilometers across the country, with a heavy focus of the Natal to Joburg corridor. That business is regulated, and it contributes 11% of earnings. TNPA, which is the Transnet National Ports Authority, is the landlord of all the commercial ports in our country, and they represent 20% of our earnings, and they are also regulated. And the reason I single these out is if you take both regulated entities, they represent 31% of our profit, and regulated entities investors like because they also give you a guaranteed rate of return on your costs and your capital. Therefore, investors don't want volatility. They want a nice stable curve in terms of earnings. So if you take our take-or-pay agreements, which give us a guaranteed return, and you take our regulated entities, it's well over two-thirds of our earnings is protected, even during downturns. That, coupled with investments in gaining market share, make this a good business, an investable business, a business that people want to buy into and to obviously lend money to. So we just wanted to highlight that, and we also wanted to highlight that our total net profit, as Mr. Gama mentioned, went from 393 million in the prior year up to 2.8 billion in the end of this financial year. But it doesn't stop there. In September, at our half-year results, I also wanted to inform the committee that our profits, just for the six-month period, were at 3.4 billion rand. So already more than this financial year's full profits. Moving on to page 10, very quickly, page 10, all I wanted to highlight there is that we've invested the 24 billion, but 5.2 has been invested in expanding because of the lack of economic activity in the country, and 16.2 has been invested in sustaining our business. But also importantly, our impairment has increased, and it was at 2 billion rand. And the majority of that is because we had to make provisions for money that were owed to Transnet by other organizations, and the majority owed by PRASA. We also wanted to highlight that in the investments we've made, we've put aside 229 billion over 7 years to invest in the country. And we've already invested significantly in rolling stock, 27 billion, rail infrastructure, 16 billion, port equipment, 8 billion. And we've manufactured in Transnet as an OEM 10,188 wagons since the start of MDS. As the government mentioned, we already received 452 locos since 2014. And I can tell you, as at the end of December 2017, we've received 619 already. And lastly, on the return on total assets, now this is an important indicator. You can see that in the prior year, 3.7 just wasn't good enough. And that shows you that we weren't getting the return on the capital because of the economic downturn. And we're pleased to report an increase to 4.9%. We're also pleased to advise the committee that at half year, we increased that further to 5.9%. So that definitely shows that the decisions made in 2015 around working capital, cost reduction, operating efficiencies, and revenue diversification are definitely starting to bear fruit. Page 11, Chair, I believe that we've already dealt with. The important part is that we still are able to borrow without government guarantees. We borrow on the strength of our own balance sheet. We haven't had a government guarantee since 1998 to 1999 financial years. And we don't intend to have any government guarantees going forward. We do borrow in the strength of our own balance sheet, and we'll continue to do so. We've highlighted our gearing and our cash interest cover, so I'll move on to page 12. Page 12 talks about our cash flow. The important point here is on the top left, our cash generated from operations, as well as our changes in working capital, have benefited us by 32.8 billion rand. That's a 16.4% increase on prior year. That shows the tight management on cash. I can also advise the committee that our cash at the end of the year was at 6.4 billion rand, and we had 24-hour call facilities of 16.3 billion rand. What that means is at year end, within a 24-hour period, we could raise 22.7 billion rand to meet any obligations required, which gives you good indication of our liquidity at that time. But I must highlight to the committee that we have had downgrades in the country since then. We know that in this financial year as a result of the downgrade on the sovereign, and because Transnet is 100% owned, we were downgraded by S&P on the 5th of April, and then Moody's obviously downgraded the country and downgraded Transnet on the 13th of June 2017. And given the fact that we're 100% linked, we can't get away from that. Even if we had the most cash, if we were an Apple or a Google, we would still be downgraded because of the inextricable link. So what they do is they also provide a standalone credit profile. And we're pleased to report that our standalone credit profile, which is based on Transnet's financials on its own, was at BBB at this time of this financial year, which is higher than the sovereign and higher than most entities in this country. And that is based on S&P's detailed review. What we also did as a company is we proactively went and negotiated with all of our lenders, because we felt that let's be proactive in case there's a credit rating downgrade. Let's go and renegotiate our triggers in our agreements. The fact that Transnet doesn't have government guarantees means that the lenders will protect themselves by putting in loan covenants for credit ratings. Now, no one anticipated that we'd be downgraded a couple of times in the last, let's say, 18 months. And unfortunately, those triggers have actually come about where the banks would then say to Transnet, we want government guarantees now. And we've negotiated with the banks saying, no, we don't want to do government guarantees because we're just going to exacerbate the problem. It's an SA Inc. discussion here. So we have then been negotiating to pay higher interest to avoid government guarantees and to avoid being a burden on the fiscus. And we've been quite successful in that respect. We've also avoided prepayments or acceleration of loans, because we don't want to be in a default position. Because the way it works in your loan agreements, there's a clause called pari passu, which means that every lender must be treated equally. So if you prepay one, you have to prepay everyone. And that would have a disastrous impact, not just on Transnet, but on the country as a whole. So we've been quite successful in those negotiations. But I want to highlight that liquidity is very tight in the country at the moment. Given the credit rating downgrades, lending money and us borrowing is far more expensive. Okay? So we're paying a lot more interest. These renegotiations didn't come cheap. We have to pay between 400 and 500 million rand per year more interest. Additionally, liquidity is not as available. The domestic markets, the domestic bond markets are looking for further transparency from SOCs, and Mr. Gama has already highlighted what we're doing with respect to regaining the confidence of the country. And we feel that's quite critical going forward. Just in terms of capital, on slide 14, if I could jump to it, slide 14 on the top left shows you that we have made that decision in 2015 to start optimizing our capital. Let's not spend irresponsibly if there isn't a guaranteed return that comes through from it. At Transnet, we believe we need to be fighting the fight with the private sector. We need to be hunting for our lunch, not just waiting for it to come to us. And therefore, we need to be financially responsible. We need to make sure that all of our investments cover a internal rate of return and a hurdle rate that obviously outweighs our weighted average cost of debt. So capital has reduced from the 33.6 billion down to 29.6 down to 21.4. And you can expect a similar number in this year's end of year financial statements. In fact, I'm sure some of the committee members will remember, in 2015 we had a 337 billion rand 7-year capital program. As a board, we then optimized, and in 2016 we reduced it to 278 billion, and in 2017 we reduced that further to 229 billion to ensure we have adequate investments that give us a return and that we can continue to be a net borrower, not relying on the fiscus. We also highlight here on the slide that our main investments have been in general freight, in rail, which is where the market share play is. Page 15 just highlights some of the equipment. And I also wanted to highlight that on local content, previously there were targets of around 75%. Our local spend is at 83.86% of total spend. 83.86% our local spend. On the 1,064 locomotives, we have already highlighted previously in other forums that our local content is currently at 46%. And that is with 35% of the delivery being finalized. So obviously you localize more and more as the learning curve for our local suppliers increases, and we expect that to increase to the expected 55% for diesel locomotives and 60% for electric locomotives. We're also pleased to report that on the bottom right that our new multi-product pipeline, which has been commissioned since 2012, has already transported over 15 billion litres of diesel from Durban to the inland regions. We also are expecting to operationalize our multi-product pipeline. So in other words, it doesn't just do diesel, it can do different grades of petroleum and diesel. And that actually was operational on time within November 2017. The next couple of slides from 16 to 24 go through our volumes and our operations. I won't go through them in detail because we've already spoken a lot about the volumes, but I'll just highlight some key facts. Page 17 on export coal, we grew by 2.4%. That is in spite of low commodity prices and reduced demand from our customers, as well as adverse weather conditions, which are becoming quite a norm in our country. Yes, there were some service execution challenges, which we're looking at rectifying through Lean Six Sigma projects. But what we've really focused on is operational efficiency. And on the bottom right, you can see that our on-time arrivals had improved by 142.7%. And our on-time departures had improved by 7.8%. And that's what the customers want to hear. They want reliability. We also, incidentally, have take-or-pays of 74 million tonnes in coal. But what was important is that we signed 7 million tonnes of new take-or-pays in the year. And that's really, really important because it means that we have other avenues that we can start getting guaranteed income on. On slide 18, iron ore. Iron ore was hit hard by commodity prices in the period. There were product availability challenges. For example, there was a two-week shutdown due to a fatality at one of our customers. But we also had our challenges. Our tipler had broken down a couple of times. And we've instituted a mega capital project to replace and refurbish our tipplers in Saldanha. We've also implemented Lean Six Sigma, and as you can see on the bottom right, our on-time arrivals and departures has improved significantly. General freight business, on slide 19. This is where there's a 400 million ton rail-friendly market. And we have, as Mr. Gama said, about 24% market share. The rest is with truck and on-road. But as I've mentioned previously, we improved our rail containers and automotive by 24.3%. We're getting double-digit growth year on year, showing that we are gaining market share. What this leads to is a greener economy, less emissions, cheaper way of doing business, lowering the costs so that the country can become more competitive from a logistics point of view. And the reason we've done that is through operational efficiencies, as well as all the new equipment, new locomotives, new wagons, and obviously new infrastructure coming on board. And we're pleased to announce that we also signed 11 million tonnes of a new take-or-pay for magnetite for the country. Moving on to page 20. Now, manganese was the star performer. And it's a great story to tell from a South African point of view. You will know that South Africa has a great opportunity as we have 80% of the world's manganese deposits and only 20% of its market share. Additionally, our quality of grade of ore is also very, very good. And Transnet transported a record 12.1 million tonnes. This was based on looking at world-class execution and creation of new loading and offloading points. We also, on the back of this performance, were able to sign new take-or-pay arrangements for 11.7 million tonnes. And our improvement was 17.5% from the prior year. This kind of story and actual performance is very, very encouraging, especially for international investors, as you're guaranteeing more and more of the income and you're hitting these record volumes. So you're actually sweating your assets. You're walking the talk. Page 21, just at a high level in terms of port volumes, they remained quite static. There was just a marginal increase of 0.7. And there were operational challenges here. Adverse weather conditions also had an impact. Mainly at Durban, Pier 1, we had some issues. So we're looking at refurbishment of straddle carriers to improve reliability. We're looking at straddle pooling at the Durban North Quay to improve usage of equipment, as well as really trying to focus on our people. Obviously, our employees are number one to us, and we're looking at upskilling and retraining various operators, as well as ensuring an improved labor force in terms of stability and productivity. I just wanted to move us on to page 23. Looking at pipelines, you can see that pipelines generally follows the economy. So when the economy is slow, people use less petroleum. That makes a lot of sense. So it was hit by the economic slowdown, but we did focus on operating efficiencies, and as you can see, each of our key performance indicators actually improved in our pipeline business.
And I want to move on to our sustainable development outcomes, which is the last part of the presentation. Mr. Gama has already raised the safety performance, which is well ahead of any global standard and our internal target, but we think that that's still not good enough because at Transnet we believe in zero harm. So one person injured is one too many. One fatality is one too many. And yes, we had 15 fatalities, which was very high. And we have obviously, we've looked at through boards of inquiry at why these incidents occurred. And many of them actually occurred through vehicle accidents. Some where employees were on their way to work or on their way home, and in some instances due to just not concentrating on the road or applying standard operating procedures, talking on the cell phone, etc. So we've actually proactively started to look at numerous vehicle safety programs, driver awareness and other safety campaigns that we've introduced to embed the safety culture that you are your brother and sister's keeper, that everyone goes home to their family every day after clocking out of work. And we can see some of the benefits. In September, for the half year, for the 6 months, we had one fatality for that period. It's still one too many, but we did show some improvement. And we'll continue to strive for zero harm. Page 26, which focuses on human resources. We have 58,828 employees in Transnet. Our target is to have at least 80% black employees, and we have achieved more than that. We have 85.2% black employees. Females at our group leadership team, which is the exec level, our target is 50%, and we have 50%. And we have improved on females at extended leadership teams and below, as well as in people with disabilities. We're not there yet. We feel we've got a lot of work to do here. We feel that we need to focus and double our efforts in ensuring female representation, especially in a very operational, heavy steel-on-steel environment. And that's why we're focusing heavily on training. And in the bottom part of the slide, you can see exactly what we're doing on training. We're exceeding our targets. We spend 3.1% of total personnel costs on training. That's 746 million rand. In fact, we've trained over 2,500 people in engineering, our technicians, our artisans, and in sector-specific trainings. And through our schools of excellence, Transnet will continue to drive as a great flagship of our academy delivery, especially in rail, ports, and engineering and pipelines. Page 27 just shows you the demographic of where the employees reside, which provinces they work in, as well as where the skills development comes from. And you can see that it shows a representative workforce across the length and breadth of our country. And obviously the training requirements are based on operational necessity. On page 28, our community development. Again, a key focus area for Transnet. As an organ of state, we don't think that we have to do this. We'd love to do this. We feel that we need to lead in community development. We feel that we need to lead in the upliftment of the communities in which we operate. And you can see that we have a variety of initiatives. Our flagship is the healthcare program. You're aware of the access that we give to primary healthcare services for rural communities through our Pelo Pepper trains. We have two Pelo Pepper trains. We actually touched 173,000 patients on board. And we also assisted through outreach programs 438,000 people during the financial year. As part of this program, we had 1,624 medical student placements, and we also touched teenage programs through 9,105 girls and 2,849 boys being part of these teenage health programs. I won't go through all the detail, but over 100,000 learners participated in sporting talent events in our sports development, and 1,200 graduates participated in provincial and national sporting codes. Over 3,000 employees were part of employee volunteering programs, and from an education point of view, we've looked at driving assistance for orphaned and vulnerable youth in communities where Transnet has large projects. And we're pleased to report that 39 matric learners from programs achieved 100% pass rate with 40 distinctions. We also provided mobile libraries to various schools to assist them with education material as well. There were various grants and donations, and as the GC has highlighted, this is obviously audited, and every donation is then looked at to ensure that the objectives are met and that the outcomes have been achieved, as well as our heritage preservation. I want to move on to our industrial capability on page 29. And looking at empowerment and transformation. Now, at Transnet, we believe, as an SOC, we need to lead in the transformation and empowerment of our supplier base. And we need to leverage our procurement spend unapologetically to drive as much localization and industrialization as possible. And you can see this is evidenced by audited factual numbers around BEE. In 2009, we only achieved 59% of all our spend on BEE-compliant companies. That was not good enough for an SOC. So we doubled our efforts, and you could see that we've increased significantly since then. And we're proud to say that over the last 3 years, we've had over 100%. And that has also shown improvement in the various categories. On the top right, you see that we've improved in EMEs, qualifying small enterprises, black-owned businesses, and black women-owned businesses. And we believe that you'll find it very difficult to find any company, listed or public, that will show these results. On supplier development, we've also been able to focus on actual supplier development delivered. In many of our contracts, we have at least 134 billion rand worth of contracts with supplier development commitments, a total 62 billion. And what we try and drive in these contracts is we apply the leverage of our procurement spend to drive in the contract skills development and training, job creation and job preservation. We look at IP transfer, investment in plants and machinery, and localization and industrialization. Page 30 shows you some of our flagship enterprise development initiatives. And we see ourselves as the leading government-owned organization driving enterprise and supplier development. I just want to highlight one or two. There's quite a few here, Chair, and if you'll allow me, I'll just highlight a couple of them. On the far left, we have the Transnet Design and Innovation Challenge and Research Center. This is an exciting initiative. We've already spent 160 million to date, and we plan on spending another 106 more. We like to partner with other organizations, and Transnet partners here with the South African Bureau of Standards, Junior Achiever South Africa, and the WITS Transnet Center for Engineering. Here what we're trying to do is to stimulate entry of black entrepreneurs, especially black youth, into high-tech sectors through innovation and R&D. We actually provide mentoring, funding, incubation, and access to markets. We drive competitions where the best ideas then get funding, and then they can go on to the next level. Our next one, the Transnet Shanduka Black Umbrella Incubation, has been running for a number of years, since 2013, and is very successful. We have an incubation center in Richards Bay and in Port Elizabeth, and we plan to have future centers in Lepalale and Burgersfield. And here we look at incubating black-owned, 100% black-owned SMMEs, which can then meet Transnet supply chain needs. Some others include the Enterprise Development Hub. We've opened hubs in Johannesburg, in Saldanha, in Dar, in Tanzania, in Eastern Cape. We're aiming to open in Tubatsi and Limpopo, as well as Mpangeni, and others in the future. And here we have a one-stop shop where we can assist small businesses to register their companies, to get their tax affairs in order, to get their BEE certification, and to help them in terms of winning work. Another one on the top right is a containerized bakery. I know it's a small one, but it makes an impact. We've spent 29.9 million in actually creating containerized bakeries, and we are doing this to empower 100% rural black woman-owned cooperatives to run and operate their own bakeries. Here we focused on the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and the Northwest. On the next page, another one that's maybe small but has a lot of impact is the furniture manufacturing incubation. We'll be focusing on black people living with disabilities and actually incubating them to help them to manufacture furniture and create their own sustainable business. And lastly, the Pooliso Enterprise and Supplier Development Fund, where we've spent 50 million and we aim to spend another 50 million on funding black-owned, black women-owned, youth-owned, people with disabilities, SMMEs, the smaller businesses. Because at the end of the day, it's not about creating just jobs, it's creating businesses that create jobs. Because if you have a sustainable business, you have a sustainable job, not a one-time contractor that then just stops after a project is finished. And that's why we're focusing on providing guarantees for large contracts for these businesses and providing access to funding. Almost concluding on page 32, this just highlights our environmental stewardship. And Sia has already mentioned we've reduced electricity consumption. We do that year on year. And also, we're pleased to announce that we regenerated 242,000 megawatt hours back into our grid. We also, through the market share on road, were able to save 637,000 tonnes of carbon dioxide equivalent. The second last slide, slide 33, from an internal control point of view, yes, we can see from the numbers we've done exceptionally well, and we are continuing to do so and growing. However, we must take cognizance of the fact that we must improve corporate governance. As Sia mentioned, we must create accountability, and we must improve consequence management. Our contract management, as highlighted in our scope sessions recently, is a key root cause for PFMA violations, and that must be improved. We also have as a root cause non-adherence to delegations of authority that need to be worked on. Our procurement processes need to be automated. There are far too many manual processes that we have in our organization, which are obviously can be the subject of abuse. So we've actually set up various programs that I'll get into in a moment, but what we also have is too many deviations and expansions, which is also the subject of discussion at our recent scope session. And although these are legal per the National Treasury Instruction Notes and the Triple PFA, many instances, they come about as a result of bad planning. So our demand management and our planning must improve as a business, and we're working on those. For example, you could have a contract where, for maintenance, this is an actual example that we had a expansion, where the machines, the on-track machines are so specialized, they take 24 months to actually manufacture and a few more months to actually ship. Now, these are very bespoke machines, high quality, and it's very important because they're safety critical for the rails so that there's no train derailments. But we didn't plan ahead and issue the tender in time. Therefore, we had to extend the contract. And that shows you where bad planning has crept in. And we're doubling our efforts in this area. Although it's not illegal, it's inefficient. So what we've done is we've also ensured that everyone is held accountable for all of their contracts that they manage. We've also then focused on putting programs of automation, and every management level, from the top down to the bottom, then has performance objectives in their performance contracts, which obviously drive any potential increase or incentive. In the slide, you'll also see that we've talked about our step-up program. Our step-up program is there to make us rely less on manual controls, which are controls that are subject to abuse. Because a manual detect control will only tell you something's happened after it's happened. So we need to focus on automated prevent controls. That will obviously stop things from happening. And that's where we're putting a lot of effort into in both operations and finance. We're also using a lot of smart analytics, data analytics. We're working with our external auditors to run monthly data analytics to pick up any exceptions and act on them before they can become a serious problem. And then obviously I've already mentioned from a PFMA point of view, and with the help of good sessions with SCOPA as an example, highlighting where we need to actually improve, huge focus on consequence management, integrated assurance across external audit, internal audit, internal control and risk functions, trying to create that strong culture of accountability and automating as many controls as possible. Lastly, Chair, just to conclude, over the short to medium term, we believe that we've shown a lot of resilience and that we can respond in an agile way in a very difficult economic environment. And it's difficult for everyone, not just Transnet. We also believe that we will create capacity, but it will be based on validated demand to ensure that we have adequate return on the money that we spent. We will continue to invest $229 billion over the next 7 years. We will do this on the back of our own balance sheet. We have highlighted to the committee that it's very difficult right now, given the downgrade situation, but we are striving to negotiate with our lenders to avoid government guarantees, unfortunately to pay a little bit more interest for now, and to fund off the back of that balance sheet. But liquidity is very, very tight, and it is a challenge for us on a day-to-day basis. We will continue to focus on cost reduction, capital optimization, and working capital management. But in the long term, Chair, we're also excited about the future. We're excited about our vision of Transnet 4.0, which is our response to the fourth industrial revolution. We believe that if the Transnet of today behaves like the Transnet of yesterday, there won't be a Transnet of tomorrow. And therefore, we're embracing technology. We're embracing digital and digitalization. We want to use the latest technologies, and we're investing heavily in looking at real-time solutions for our customers and new products. You know, innovative ideas such as Uber for containers are things that we're developing at the moment, which will be at the forefront of logistics in our country and beyond. And we're also looking at new business, not just looking at our old areas of focus, such as natural gas. Natural gas is a great opportunity for our country, especially in Saldanha, East London, and Richards Bay. And we're working with the private sector. Transnet doesn't have to do everything on its own balance sheet. if it's going to be relying on its own balance sheet and not the fiscus, we need to go to the private sector. And we have a number of projects that total at least 280 billion rand where the private sector can get involved with us. We don't have to own 100% of it. We can work and facilitate growth in our country. And that we'll focus on in property and maritime development. And we'll extend beyond transit footprint in Africa, Middle East, and South Asia so that we can become the leading logistics service provider with end-to-end solutions as well as being an OEM in the country. So lastly, Chair, through you and to the committee, we're very proud of our results. We know that we do have a lot of work to do, especially in the areas I've highlighted around internal controls, governance, and procurement, especially in automation. We need to ensure that we finalize our investigations, we're transparent with our findings, and we act accordingly. We need to unlock liquidity in the market and restore confidence. But through our operational unity and perpetual innovation, we believe our results show that we have turned a corner. And we can promise you one thing, in the financial year that follows, we believe that our results will be even better than this and will be the best in our company's history. So, Chair, we'd just like to pause there for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CFO. GCE, would like to add anything?
No, I think we are open to the committee in terms of your guidance, in terms of how we move forward. And I think, as indicated in our presentation, the key for us is really agility and dynamism, and the ability for us to change course and understand where the economy is growing and make sure that we invest best on based on validated demand to make sure that we continue to strengthen the logistics backbone of our country, because what Transnet does is quite important in terms of repositioning South Africa Inc. To become competitive in the markets in which we operate in, and especially companies that are involved in exports and imports, the facilitation of trade. It's quite important for Transnet to be strong in order to catalyze economic growth in our economy.
Thank you. Board members, any additions or would you like to await for the questions from members at this stage? No, we'll wait for your questions, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
I'm noting hands. Honorable Uyenge, Honorable Mare, Honorable Dlamini. I'm trying to get something to write on my list. Where's my agenda? I always write on my agenda. Thanks. In that order. And I said Honorable Uyenge, Honorable Mare, Honorable Dlamini, did I mention your name? Dlamini, Honorable Veli, Honorable Shivambo, Honorable Whip, Honorable Ranto. In that order, members. Welcome, I did receive your apology, Honorable Mara. In that order.
Thanks, Chairperson. Good morning to everybody. Let me appreciate the presentation by Transnet. Precisely, let me start with the overview by the Group Chief Executive Officer, which has actually responded to the issues that are in the public domain about Transnet, which he said a report as it relates to them is going to be presented. Safe to also indicate the fact that we hope that that report will actually assist even in the process of the inquiry, because the committee inquiry because Transnet is one of the institutions that will that have been identified, especially on matters that relate to Mackenzie Regiment and Trillian, the Gupta-related aspects, which will be covered well. I think I'm happy, Mr. Kame, that you have taken note of that and you are doing something that will actually put us on board. One thing that I would want you to breathe on is the issue that relates to petitions. How do you deal with petitions that are sent to the company and petitions maybe in the form of complaints or in the form of litigations, cases of litigations where Transnet has not arisen to the expectation of a particular member of the society. The issue that relates to your properties. In the country, there are properties that are at your disposal. Vis-a-vis now the current act that allows people to be given the land that belongs to them without compensation. How do you perceive Transnet locating herself in the right scope so that we don't see Transnet being taken to court for issues that should have been dealt with prior to communities rising up and demanding land from Transnet? I would suggest a method that you will employ even to engage before, because where you have your clear intentions to actually invest in a number of pieces of land that are at your disposal and those that are required to be considered in the manner where people think that it belongs to us, it doesn't belong to government. On financial issues, Chairperson, I think the CFO is very eloquent in talking to these aspects and a very promising kind of stance and attitude. It's good to be always hopeful and positive in dealing with matters. But I want to check maybe if you have at Transnet the suspense account. Do you have a suspense account and how do you deal with that kind? That account is not pronounced Mr. Gama. You know, all departments, cut across departments, they'll never tell you that we have a suspense account, an account for unclaimed monies, maybe for people who have worked for the company, or items that actually accumulate some funds and they don't belong in any of the line functions of Transnet, and then they are put there. There is a policy that should be in place to dispose of that particular fund if it is there. The asset manage policy, how do you manage your assets? The depreciation policy as well as disposal of your items, of your assets as well as the asset register. Is the group chief executive officer an inventory holder of the assets of Transnet or the CFO? If I get an indication around that, then Chairperson, on issues of HR, I've spoken to litigations, and then for vacancy rate in your organogram, is your organogram fully populated? If no, what is the vacancy rate and at what levels? and the method to deal with that. Do you have a leave register, and how is it managed? I'm referring to leave register, Community Chairperson, is that when you're talking leave, you're talking to money, it's money. If workers, they take much more time out of work because of leaves that are granted or not granted, or leaves that are of any nature, it speaks to money. Then lastly, on social responsibility programs, what is the method that Transnet is using to ensure that the transfers that are made to different organizations, civil society organizations, including community-based organizations, to make sure that if that particular request that has been made for a particular program, has it been undertaken in the manner it was applied for and you approved and made the funds available for that? Thank you.
In that order, ESCOM, I would like you to take notes, Transnet, to take notes of all the questions and between the executive and the board, and so that you are able to remind each other, because I'm going to allow all members to take questions. I can see a hand from Honorable Mazone. I did receive an apology to arrive late, and you're welcome, but I'm going to put you after Honorable, no, not last, after Honorable Tseli. Thank you. In that order now is Honorable Mare.
Thank you, Chairperson. Dangerous slip of the tongue between ESCOM and Transnet. Thank you. I first want to compliment, actually, the executive and the board as far as the financial side is concerned. I think it is great to see what's going on in Transnet, and your gearing and everything seems excellent. And we've got hope when we look at this for the future of SOEC that's being managed that way. I want to start off by saying that, and I want to be now very specific, in the National Development Plan, it was stated by the national government that Saldanha Bay would be a national growth point, and one of the focus areas would have been as the export of iron ore, as you also mentioned on page 34 of your presentation. There on the right hand side, your 7-year capital investment by commodity would be in iron ore, 8.9 billion. Now 2 years ago there was a very interesting presentation by Transnet as far as the capital program for Saldanha Bay per se, complementing the industrial development zone that was announced by the national government for that area. And I must be honest, I requested several times through this committee to have an update on that capital investment program per se, focused on the whole Saldanha Bay area that includes, for example, now Transnet and Portnet per se. The provincial government in the Western Cape also identified the Saldanha Bay area then following the national government as a provincial growth point, and a lot of money were put into upgrading of roads and everything in that whole area. But it seems there might be a slowdown in the investment. That could be foreseen in the sense that there's a slowdown in the economy, and maybe there's also a slowdown in the demand of iron ore, or export, to put it that way. But I would really love, and I appeal now to the executive and the board, if we can receive an update on the whole program, because it was estimated at that point in time that the investment would be 8.5 billion over a 7 up to 9 year capital program period. That's my first request that I have for the executive here. Then secondly, I want just convey my thanks to Transnet per se, as far as the community development CSI investment is concerned. 3 years ago, they did take hands with on a 50-50% basis with the municipality in Saldanha Bay building a pavilion at the rugby sport complex. Now, since then, the municipality per se have built with their own cost a youth indoor sports facility. Now, what they're looking forward if they can get take hands for an indoor program for developing, and I want to emphasize that indoor sports. There's some sports that you do like indoors, like it could be volleyball, it could be basketball, it could be, there's a lot, playing ball, all of that is. And behind this facility, that's very interesting what they built, and the opening would be now in April of this facility, so it hasn't been used, it's brand new, they're finishing off the last. They've built behind this facility space for what we call a youth cafe for training of computers for the youth. And this facility is actually built within the community. So it's like walking distance, 50 meters, 100 meters, 200. There's no need for transport for that whole area. The children and youth are there. So looking for a partnership, actually. And the facility is very much secure, so nobody could get into it. So that is a big plus. So it's a combination of indoor sport training on the one side, and the other side is training as far as computers is concerned. If there's a possibility, I would really love if you could engage with me or with your CEO of Transnet and Portnet in Saldanha, as well as that area. I would really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson, CEO and the board chair. You know, there's a saying that says, if you find yourself in a hole, the first thing you do is to stop digging. I'm saying this because your counterparts at ESCOM, they are not doing that, including your former ministers and everyone. They're already in a hole, but they keep digging. There's no stop. Regiments, McKinsey and Trillian, what is their current status now? I know you spoke about investigation. Are they currently still in the system? Are there payments that are currently made to these companies? What is the current status now? Because if they are still working, the inquiry, as the Honorable Luyanga said, we're going to deal with that. Investigations are happening. There's a state capture investigation that's going to take place, but what is the current status now? Are we doing parallel inquiries, but they continue to loot money from Transnet? What is the current status? Also, in the 1064 locomotives, the projected 5.2 billion the Guptas were supposed to receive, what is the status there? Are you in contact with the companies that got awarded these projects? Are they getting these kickbacks? What is the status there? The CEO mentioned the issue of the market share between the trucks and the rail, that they trying to get more of the goods on the rail. So there's a contestation there. If you can expand on that. I agree with the issue of the reducing of consultants within the system. Look like the leadership of Transnet is listening to superior logic of the EFF when we said build state capacity. So I agree with that approach of reducing consultants and other professionals that are not needed. Build state capacity, build internal capacity within the company so that you can be able to save costs. The PE procurement spend, you said it's over 100%. If you can elaborate on that, why I need that. ESCOM came to us and say, you've got evergreen contracts. And all of them, when you look at them, they say, no, they are PE compliant and everything. But the fact of the matter is that there's no black people, especially African, that are benefiting there. It's just this compliance that, no, you buy this and this and this. Want to see, because these companies, if they're going to lead transformation, We can't have, after 24 years, that you can't have any black company that can manufacture anything independently and be able to supply. Not the people that are fronting, not people that go and buy stuff in China and come and say, no, a big company, and then supply to you. Where we say, let's see your manufacturing plan from point A to the last point to see that this is a 100% black-owned company, owned black as in black people, not paperwork. Because we sit with the computers, they will be all of a sudden they are not South African citizens. So we want to get the, if you are doing the audit on that. On the issue of TPNA, Transnet Ports National Authority, we are saying it's the landlord of the ports. We've got a situation in the oil and gas, the storage facilities. How they are structured, the Department of Energy, they issue license. You guys, you issue the storage facilities. But those storage facilities, the way they are structured, they were built by those oil companies. And now they're holding you in ransom because you gave them land, they built the storage facilities. So there is no transformation that is happening there. What is the current occupation in storage facilities? Who is sitting in Devon and all the ports in terms of storage facilities? Is this the established multinational oil companies, or is there participation of black people? If not, what is the issue? Because I know one of the challenges is that they own the actual infrastructure, the facility. You just own the land and then you gave it to them. Don't you think maybe you must, now that as a country we are agreeing again with EFF that you must expropriate without compensation, don't you think you must take along and expropriate those storage facilities without compensation? Because those oil companies have been there. Otherwise, if they continue to own those things, there is no change. There is no way you're going to get into the space that is occupied by Engine, Total, Shell and everyone. The issue of the rail, you're saying 57% of your contribution to your revenue. Access to those wagons. There are black companies that are complaining that they've got access to coal, but they need to export that coal. But for them to get access to those wagons within Transnet themselves to say, can we lease these wagons so that we can take our coal straight to Richards Bay? They don't get favorable conditions from your side. Can you give us a detail on that in terms of black companies having access to those wagons either through rental from Transnet so that they can be able to export their own products? The Gupta leaks, when there were Gupta leaks, you hired a company called Wetsmans or something. What is the status of that investigation? Did they stop? Did they come back to you with the results? What happened there? And then the CEO mentioned that there's an investigation on the 1064 locomotives. Does that cover the 95 and the 100 locomotives that happened in 2012 and 2013? Are they, because the computer's already there, are they part of that investigation? Is it covered? And then you're saying you've got 58,000 employees. Your employees are anxious. They are angry, they are scared because they feel they've been betrayed by their own leader. At Eskom, most employees, they are there, they've been working for Eskom, they don't know any other company except Eskom. With the company in Tata, in debt, they don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. The future of their kids, the houses that they've got bonded with those issues. Are you communicating to employees now, especially with the media publications in terms of the state-owned companies to say, look, the company is stable, this is what is happening? Is your HR communicating with those workers? Because what is happening at Eskom, it's where those employees, they don't know what's going to happen next. Every day they leave, they don't know whether they're going to wake up and told that the company is closed. They've got commitments that they've made, as I'm saying, but some of them, they started their careers in Eskom. That's the only company they know. Now they are worried. Are you communicating with them? Then lastly, the CEO talked about the commitment in terms of industrialization. And you know that one of the key components when you talk industrialization is infrastructure, especially rail. how many kilometers of rail that we have laid inland as a commitment, because if you go talking industrialization, someone who wants to build a factory in Umtata, he needs access to rail to move his products somewhere to Northwest, or someone who's in Kimberley wants to go to Free State, Eastern Cape, all over the shore, because the apartheid planning as the rail lines are sitting now. All the rail, they move from inland straight to the sea. They take our products out of the country. What is the current setup with Transnet now? Do we have a plan? Because you can't just speak industrialization if you're not going to talk to the issue of the rail transport, the access to rail, in the areas where they want to start and develop and have these and have these companies. That would be all, Chairperson. Thank you.
You're welcome. Honorable Tseli, it's your turn.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation on as well. You see, appreciate the steps that you are taking in terms of dealing with cases of fraud and corruption, and those that you indicated have been reported to all the crime-fighting agencies, relevant crime-fighting agencies. We will obviously follow these cases with interest, and we'll appreciate as you, when you come back, you give us feedback in terms of how those cases have been handled. Page 28 talks about your community development, from your community development programs, in terms of the assistance that you continue to provide to communities in that regard. We will obviously appreciate in the next presentation to indicate exactly where these programs are, so that in the course of us doing our constituency work, we are then able to visit even some of these projects. But if you know exactly now where some of those projects are, we'll appreciate if you can just share with us. I'm interested in knowing the contribution that the company has made in terms of job creation, your contribution to the to government's targets in terms of job creation. So I'm interested in knowing in the past 5 years or so the contribution that the company has made. CFO, you spoke about borrowings, and I'm a bit worried. Borrowings against vis-a-vis the 29.1 billion paid term, the debt, the 29.1 debt. Starting with your borrowings, you spoke about 17 billion that has been borrowed. You paid 24 billion, which is fine. It shows stability in terms of your finances. But I'm interested in knowing whether the 7% is in terms of the interest or in terms of paying for the previous financial years, from 17 billion to 24. Going back to the 9.1 billion debt, I'll appreciate if you can just try and clarify that particular aspect. I think it was page 12, if I'm not mistaken. Your cost reduction mechanisms, I think we highly appreciate, but I'm worried about the moratorium on filling of vacancies, the impact that it has in terms of the critical positions that have been budgeted, whether they are not impacting on service delivery in that regard. But the issue of the reduction in terms of utilization of consultancies, that we highly appreciate, as Honorable Jamie has indicated. I'm happy about the representation of females and people with disabilities, especially at executive level. I think we need to commend the company in that regard. Honorable Dlamini spoke about BBBEE in terms of your local supply industrial development. And I want to go back to this issue, because if you have seen one article that was run by City Press on Sunday, there is one very painful story of a man who was used by a white couple for 12 years as a friend. A very painful situation. So I'm interested in knowing the mechanisms that you have to detect fronting as you continue to award tenders to these companies, because more often our people are being abused. They are told they are part of companies when they are not getting anything. In this specific case, this man has been part of this panel beating company for 12 years. He is said to be a 40% shareholder when he's not getting anything. So I'm interested in knowing the mechanisms that we have to detect fronting. The last one, I'm happy because one of your members there introduced himself as a communications manager. Can you share with us your communication strategies? Because we must not only hear about Transnet only when there are negative things happening. It's important from time to time that Transnet must talk about the things that you are doing. I'm aware of quite a number of achievements that you've achieved from the presentation. But if you are not communicating, people will only wait for those that things that are negative, and then run with the message. So if you can just share with us your communication strategy, we will definitely appreciate. Let me pause, Chapter.
Thank you very much. You're welcome, Honorable Mazoni.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I believe I was called Honorable Mazwani yesterday.
Yes.
So I've been inducted into a new clan. Chair, thank you very much, and thank you to the Transnet Board. A couple of questions. I'd like to start out, and I'm sure you probably did address it before I arrived, and I apologize for that. But the one thing that always struck me at Transnet is working very well was your artisanal training programs that you rolled out. When I was a kid, many of the little boys in my class and the little girls in my class wanted to grow up and build trains. And I see that kind of want is disappearing these days. Everyone wants to become a lawyer or a doctor or something like that. Can you tell me how your artisanal training program is going and how you are advertising it? Because in a country such as ours where employment is such an issue, I think we should be encouraging young people to become builders of great pieces of material that goes onto our rails. And I just want to know how these training programs are going and how you're getting especially young boys and young girls interested in getting into the industry. Chair, then, I have received an alarmingly large amount of requests, and I assume it's because of our inquiry that's been ongoing into ESCOM, but a lot of people that are working at Transnet have been sending me inquiries about the variation in salaries and processes. With TPT, TNPA, MPT, TE, and TFR. And it goes around salary variations in terms of people doing exactly the same jobs in different cities and employment processes and HR processes. So can I just have an indication of if there is a salary differential that happens in these different organizations according to city? If so, why? And if there's different HR processes that are employed in the different cities. Chair, then, I think everyone has to, I mean, it's the elephant in the room, is the SAP investigation that's taken front page news over the past week. I'd just like to know from Transnet's side, you know, is everyone obliging with this SAP investigation that's happening? Have there been any suspensions? Is anyone currently under investigation? Chair, also CAD, which is now known to be a company linked to Duduzani Zuma, the front page news last week was that two contracts were being investigated. Chair, just if we can have an analysis of if work has been suspended with CAD, and also if anyone has been suspended following the outcomes of these stories being broken. Chair, the Hawks reported before Scopa about a week and a half ago, and they spoke about four cases with Transnet that the Hawks were investigating. Chair, one of them dealt with tender bids being increased over 500%. Hawks indicating that some of these cases are 96% complete. Chair, just an update from Transnet as to where they stand with these cases and in terms of whether or not the people that are involved in these cases are still walking the corridors of Transnet. Chair, Business Leadership SA suspended the membership of Transnet. I'd just like to know if that membership has subsequently been renewed. Chair, seven companies are currently being investigated by South African Security Services regarding dealings that could be improper. These seven companies have all done business with Transnet, and Chair, I'd like it on record from Transnet that Transnet has suspended dealings with these companies, and if not, why not? Chair, these companies are SAP, China South Rail, McKinsey, Neotel, T-Systems, Shanghai Zhenhao, and Liva Africa. Chair, these are the seven companies that have been identified to being currently being under investigation because of wrongdoing at Transnet. So I think it's imperative that we now know where they stand in terms of Transnet, and we certainly don't want these people walking around our corridors. And then lastly, Chair, the Transnet pensioners...
Just repeat the name.
Sure. SAP, China South Rail, McKinsey, Neotel, T-Systems, Shanghai Zhenhao, and Liva Africa. And Chair, my last question, the status of the Transnet pensioners case that is before the court. I'd like to know where we are. The last time we spoke, there was some kind of negotiation going on. One of our colleagues in the House made a statement the other day completely to the contrary. So if we could just have an update as to where we are with the Transnet Pensioners Court case. Thank you.
You're welcome. Let me welcome the guest in this committee, Honorable Shivambu. I'm going to allow you to speak, and I hope...
I'm not a guest, actually. I'm an alternate member.
I have a list here. I do not have.
If you check in the list that you've been given here,
no.
I'm an alternate member.
Okay, no,
that's
no,
why
let,
even...
Let me say this. Just hold on a second for me.
Okay, that's fine.
What I was briefed on...
Yes.
Is that you requested to be an alternate member on the inquiry? No. I'm saying what I was informed of. So you know, when we are a new chair, you interact and get an update and debrief by the acting chairperson. That's my understanding. And that you're an alternate on the inquiry, and then on the full portfolio committee. In fact, we don't have an alternative on full portfolio, that's my understanding. Because from 2014 up to the, maybe let me say 24th of October, because I became a member of this portfolio committee on the 25th of October. I was a member of the portfolio committee myself on human settlement and the WIP. And that's a general practice that we don't have alternate members on full committees. We have parties are located, numbers, we have six ANC, but and if you remove the chair, then they become five as members of the committee. You have two DA, you have one EFF, you have one IFP, one UDM, and then from the smaller opposition parties, Mr. Shelembe becomes sometimes he attends, sometimes he doesn't attend. That I know that full members of the committee, they are 11 full members of the committee, and that's my understanding. But let's park that. I'm going to allow you to speak.
That's fine, Chair. Let's quickly deal with that. I'll take an opportunity later on to ask my office to forward you the rules of the National Assembly. There's no committee that doesn't have an alternate. So we in the Chief Whip's Forum agreed in principle that all committees must have alternate from the parties, and the alternates can participate concurrent to the serving member and have full participation rights. That is what the rules of the National Assembly says, but we'll send you the relevant prescripts.
I can see the DA is disagreeing with you.
Yeah, there's no problem. I'm a chief whip of a party, okay, and then I deal with this every day.
Okay, I will get that from the chief whip, but I'm saying that has been the practice. But if that has been, there was a new amendment and a new agreement, as chairpersons through our committee chairperson should have been informed. But it's not a transmission. Chairpersons are going to have a meeting with the committee chairperson. We'll be able to get clarification on that.
Yeah, we'll forward you the relevant section.
No, the chief whip, I'll get it from the chief whip. Thank you very
yes,
much.
Yes, I will actually speak to the chief whip of the majority
yes,
party to deal with
you.
That answer.
Yeah.
It's just a slight confusion. The I want to ask specific questions in terms of Transnet. One is how much debt does Transnet have, and how much of that debt is state guaranteed? And number two is on your procurement spend, how much is what percentage goes to fully black-owned companies? Number three is that we opened the case as the EFF on the 9th of June 2017 against Igmal Sharma, who was in the Transnet board, against the CFO, Gary Peter, for the locomotives tender, which it's beyond doubt now that there was an agreement reached with Trillian, and Salim Issa registered a company in Hong Kong and is receiving facilitation fees for that tender. What I want to know specifically with regards to locomotives tender is who else except Igmal Sharma, whom I see in the board that I have access to here, is no longer in the board. Who else served in the adjudication committee that decided on the locomotives tender? Are those people still serving in the board of Transnet? And two, what is the status of that tender? Are you still receiving the locomotives from the companies that were awarded to supply those locomotives? And are you still paying for that on the same price which was evidently ballooned for corruption purposes? And if that is the case, we want to say as a recommendation to the board that if the tender is still going, it must be discontinued immediately. Because there is prima facie and solid case that there was corruption committed in awarding the tender, and there was wrongdoing that leads to what broadly is referred to as state capture.
So those are the concrete issues that we want to give us the names of the people that are still in the board or even management that were involved in the adjudication of the tender that was awarded to China South or North Rail. I don't know who else got that. And how much are you paying? Are you still paying? Because we might be speaking and giving you praises here when there is a crime which is being committed as we speak. So we do not want that to be the case. But also, I know that the inquiry is going to deal with this if ever we call some of the individual members that are concerned. I want to know from the chairperson, the CE, and the CFO, and the other board members, if they've got any relationship with any of the Gupta families. So the chair, do you discuss business of Transnet with the Guptas or with Salim Issa? Same with the CE, same with the CFO. So we want that, those answers, and board members, we want those answers to be given on record here so that we know what next to deal with when we deal with those issues. Those are the concrete issues, and my recommendation is that the committee should entertain that if the locomotive tender, which we all have been appraised was not properly managed, is continuing, the board must be given an instruction to put a moratorium on it until all issues of concern around it have been dealt with adequately. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Followed by Honorable Ranto.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. And let me also welcome the presentation by Transnet. I have a concern that will always be there until it is addressed. The concern of moving the load from road to rail. I think CFO and the GCE of Eskom, you need to take note of that, because it is a pain to see the way our national roads look like. And also, I think if you are in a mission, as you have said, of empowering the youth and also of job creation, you need to rethink the issue of offloading the loads from the road, because I think that if there is anything that we need to do, we need to empower our youth and also to create jobs, and that is the policy of government, the creation of jobs. The expansion of railway lines in the country and the revitalization of lines that were closed and that are no more working to move the goods from one point to another. You have a footprint that you have made, or you have presented to us as a committee in African regions, regions in Africa, whatever. Do you get returns out of your footprint? What are the challenges in regards to that? You know, I have been complaining or raising my concern. Let me not say complaining. I have been raising my concern with you, in fact, with all the entities under public enterprises on their KPIs. According to the audit report, or yes, if I'm not mistaken, I don't have the audit report with me now. You didn't reach your KPIs the past 4 years. And yet, when you are presenting to us, you only speak about, you just brush on past the KPIs that you have set for yourself. And my concern is that in your KPIs, can you explain those KPIs that you have achieved and those that you have not achieved? And also explain, why do you have to set a high standard than the capacity that you have? Because if you don't achieve 78% of your 100, I'm making an example, 100 out of your 100% KPIs, and you don't achieve, so it means that you don't have capacity, because you don't reach even 50% of what you of your KPIs. The other thing on the Africa strategy, with the global recession or the global economic growth that has declined, how did it affect Transnet? I am not sure if this belongs to you, but I wanted to check on the Free State accident that killed so many people. You didn't say anything. I'm not sure if you were involved, but I remember something that was mentioned about Transnet. There is something that was mentioned about Transnet, but I don't know what it is. But if you don't have anything, you are not involved in that area of that accident, you don't have to say anything, but I remember something mentioned about Eskom. Your about Transnet. Your audit report raised irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure for the past 4 years. How are you addressing this? If the Auditor General is presenting his report or her report and come up with a report like this, and I think Auditor General always suggests something or guide you on what you should do according to the guidance of the Auditor General. What is it that you can raise that it say that says, according to the results or the report of the Auditor General or the audit report, we cannot do what has been said to us or what has been a concern that has been raised by the audit report? But also I want to, when you respond to the issues of the Africa strategy that you have presented to us, you must tell us the progress on that report, on your strategy, or you give us maybe an assurance that you will have to come back and come and present the progress on that strategy. The GCE has mentioned the other committees that they were called to by Parliament. I don't have the SCOPA report with me. I could not get the whip of the committee last night to get their report. But my concern is that when you were called by the SCOPA in Parliament, you came for the first time. The second time, the SCOPA members of Parliament were running around in Parliament looking for you, and they could not find you. What was the problem? Were you not prepared to sit and present what they expected from you, or were you running away were you running away from telling them the truth? Chairperson, I think those are my questions and my concerns that I wanted to raise. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. Let me join the members of the committee in appreciating the good presentation, and also welcome the progress report by the GCE in relation to governance of governance issues in Transnet, and members have identified some of those areas, and I'm not going to repeat them. I just appreciate that you saw it fit that we would like to have an progress on those issues, noting that I was informed that it has been a while for the portfolio committee, this portfolio committee, to meet with the Transnet due to some of the other engagements of the portfolio committee, the inquiry processes that they had to start in July last year, and some other challenges that were there before. Noting that I'm aware that other portfolio committees that have a more number of entities, like more than eight or so with us, and some they have more, they are unable to meet all the entities in a financial year. They select the groups, and some of them are unable, hence. But I wish that in this portfolio committee, we will try and find a way of meeting regularly now that the SOEs are really in the public domain all the time, sometimes with wrong reasons. But I want to appreciate that we are aware that there are good employees in Transnet that are doing a good job, but notwithstanding, with those few that are being alleged to be involved in some of the issues that have been raised by members that borders to fraud and corruption. And I'm not going to go on details, because on your progress report, you, at least for my sake, as the GCE, is your first time to interact with the committee and with myself chairing, that you were able to summarize on those that the National Treasurer assist with the forensic investigations on some, and some of it poor management issues, some of it lapses in corporate governance, as you have
procurement irregularities and all of that. So having said that, I would like us to note the Department of the Public Enterprises to note that I understand that the SOEs, market and public, in a sense. Maybe the reporting, because they are companies, it might change, not being exactly the follow the reporting of a department per se of government. But maybe on quarterly reports, it will assist us to have a comprehensive report by the department summary that will give us the, for instance, the KPIs of the particular entity. Today we're talking about Transnet. How many of those KPIs that they've set for themselves, the target, because when we come to these financials, they talk of actuals, and we want to have an understanding, I would like to have an understanding of the target that was set out, and then what has been achieved, the actuals. And the output that we were expected to receive, the performance indicators of the SOE. So that will assist us. Now, I'm saying to the department, the DG, if the DG can look at that. And coming to the, now we are towards the end of our MTSF. In fact, we are only left, if I'm not mistaken, we are only left with 14 months towards our MTSF, our five-year period, and then our five-year term as members of Parliament and members of this committee. So it's important for us to be able to check whether the department and the SOE stroke SOEs, their performance in relation to whether you have linked it with the outcomes of the NDP, the vision of the NDP that we have to realize in 2030, and thereof the outcome of the public enterprises outcome 4 and 6 of the NDP. And whether are we in line with the government manifesto? How far are we with the government Mahula's decisions? How far are we? And whether the budget and our spending is linked to that NDP, to that SONAS that have been presented by presidents from 2014 throughout, and the current, the recent one. We'll come to the recent one. There will be a time where we'll come, the department will have to come and report on us what is it that you are doing in order to respond to the SONA issues related to the department and SOEs. So that format I would really like the department to adopt. And the resolutions, all the resolutions that are taken by the cabinet for department to implement and SOEs. I just want to cite few SONA issues that were raised by the president, which is important. I'll pose a question to ask if Transnet board members in Transnet, do you have a policy that allows board members to do business with Transnet? Secondly, do you have a policy in Transnet that allows employees of Transnet to do business with Transnet? And I hope if your answer is yes, you were in attendance. If not, you were listening. If not, the department was able to forward you with the SONA by the president on the issues of board members getting involved on operational matters, including procurement. And for now, I don't need a comprehensive report. The minister will deal with that. I just need an answer, yes or no, do we have such a policy or not? And the minister on the 30th, especially you, GCE, the chairperson of the board, was in attendance when he take us through, when she at the time, the minister, the then Minister Lynn Brown, take us through on the state of SOEs. There was a mention on Transnet of vacancies on board that have to be regularized to meet the number of directors. And also there was an issue that the transport logistics, the railway, required attention, and I think Honorable Ranto and other members, I hope they were referring to that. If not, if I can get that. But coming back to the report by the CFO on financials, I am comfortable with the state of the finances. The fact that GCE have received an unqualified audit report, and I want to really you confirm, but if I heard the whip correctly, Honorable Ranto, to say that on your audit, is the Auditor General involved? Because in some SOEs, the Auditor General office is not involved, or if it's involved, it's just communicating, but not physically auditing your books. I know you use your own external auditors, but the President had something to say about that. We'll get into that in some other meetings. But we must commend you, the board, the chairperson board, and the board for getting that unqualified audit report. And but I'm comfortable that you were able to touch on issues raised by SCOPO. Because chairperson, you were in the meeting of SCOPO GCE. And I don't think you noticed, I entered in that meeting to observe in that meeting, but I had to leave early to rush to another meeting. So always the department like you to keep follow up on the issues that are being raised by SCOPO. And as a committee, we are going to do that precisely because when SCOPO calls a department and entities, the first question is that why the portfolio committee didn't do anything about this. So it will be important for us to make those follow-ups. And the SCOPO is not a portfolio committee like us, you know, it's a standing committee. so they deal with really issues, and they have some teeth to bite than us as a standing committee, the scope. And on your financials, I'm comfortable that you are able to service your debt, but making sure that you don't increase debt. I'm not sure whether Treasury will agree, National Treasury, but from my point of view, being not a financial person, I'm comfortable to pay more interest in order to reduce the debt. But we'll see whether National Treasury will agree with that. But being just a member of the Portfolio Committee, that's my observation. And coming to the engineers within the program that you have for engineering trainees. From my past life in the human settlements, we have been saying that we must build the inner capacity in terms of engineering technicians. And my point is, department, both ESCOM, and we said, although we said to ESCOM at some stage, the inner capacity in relation to engineers, the ESCOM and Transnet must be seen as a home of engineers in their nature. And blacks, engineers, in general, their number must be increased, and Africans in particular, engineers, the transfer of skills. I hope as we embark on this program, you are absorbing those engineers and transferring skills by the senior engineers that are about to retire. But also I hope that program at some stage will translate to the reduction of consultants. And I hope when we speak of consultants, we are not talking about people who at some stage were employed by Transnet and realize that there is a lot of money if you become a consultant, they resign, and then the following day, the following month, they become consultants for Transnet. Because that becomes a problem. Because those engineers you should have, I hope you do have, department and entity, a succession plan to build that inner capacity of engineers in different disciplines. And at some stage, we'll just have, want to have that kind of a report. And in our also future reporting, we would like to see, when we say black companies in general, and Africans in particular, would like the black companies or entrepreneurs and other level of higher black companies to see how many Africans, how many are owned by Africans, how many are owned by Indians, how many are owned by colors, how many women contractors, at what level, and providing what type. We don't want the names. No, we don't want the names. How many female, how many youth that are led by youth and by people with disability or disabled people. The national government talk of 2%. Have you reached that percent? I would like to see us going to 5% at least. But have you reached that, at least that 2% that is stipulated by government policy? So that's the kind of a report that we want to see introduced by you department, and then they will come to. Of course, you'll have to meet with them time to time to get those kind of reports. And let me allow you now. I think we can have a short break of comfort break. 2 minutes or five, members? Five minutes. We are back at 12 now. It's 11:55. We are back at 12 noon. Then we get responses. Thank you very much.
Unfortunately, we are starting. We are resuming. This circuit. In fact, it's 1 minute beyond that now, because of the queues in comfort rooms. But let's resume. And those that are ready, Chairperson, if you want to lead, or you want the executive to lead, and then you come at the end with the board members. But
yes.
If there are issues that you would like to raise, because I don't see them inside, you can start generally responding.
I can respond to the question of SCOPA. There was a misunderstanding between Transnet and SCOPA, and we appeared before SCOPA, and the matter was cleared, and the matter was finalized and dealt with. The matter was closed.
Any other board members would like to add anything? Not at this stage. Come in, Chief.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Maybe so that we save time. If an issue deals with those number of members, deals with governance issues in ESCOM that relate to Transnet. Thank you. Transnet that relate to Transnet being in a queue of being called in future too. If the inquiry continues or what, if you would like to address those, address them, DCE, all of them together, regardless if it came from which member. So, and then you group all that kind of, and your team should assist you in grouping the questions that are related to each other so that you don't be save time. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. we thank you also for the questions and the guidance that you continue to give, but also importantly, the accountability that the entity has to bring to bear. I think that let's start with the governance issues as dealt with. The entities that were talked about, which include McKinsey, Trillion and Regiment, we put those in one pot. There is no work that is currently done by McKinsey at Transnet. In fact, I think They have not done any work in Transnet since about February 2016. The Trillium regiments were on record as having cancelled the contracts that Transnet and regiments had. Those were cancelled approximately around September, October of 2016, when it had emerged that there were possible suspicions of wrongdoing. And some of those matters are in court. And in fact, some of the monies that we ought to have paid to them, we've kept them in a suspense account pending the outcome of the court case indicating to us what is likely to happen. There are a number of allegations, obviously, that have been made against a number of entities, such as T-Systems, Neotel, Liba, ZPMC, and SEP. And we deal with each of these matters according to their own merits. So allegations have been made, as I've indicated, that with each and every allegation, investigations are being done. We take the view that the forensic investigation is going to uncover for us whether there's any evidence of wrongdoing, because that helps us in terms of proving that. And where no such proof exists yet, we are unable to take any particular action. But as Transnet, we do know that, you know, in terms of the laws of contract, where there's breaches, there are remedies such as termination that are available to us, and we need to follow those particular contracts to make sure that all of these matters are dealt with. We will not leave any stone unturned in the pursuit of making sure that Transnet, the entity, that its name gets cleared and that its reputation is restored. It's very, very important for us to deal with those issues. In as far as petitions and litigation and complaints from the public are concerned, we deal with those in the manner and way in which they come. We do get quite a lot of these. We have a tip-offs anonymous line, for instance, that assists us where there is allegations of fraud. We also have a number of people that are perpetual complainers, and some of them are disgruntled employees or former employees, in fact, of Transnet who are wrong and who did something wrong in the past and they were dismissed by Transnet. Some of them, they spend a lot of time trying to perpetuate and to create a lot of stories. But we investigate those nevertheless. Some of them call themselves whistleblowers. They only became whistleblowers after they were dismissed from Transnet. A whistleblower, by definition, is somebody who is inside, who finds wrongdoing and reports on it. And we, as Transnet, have pledged that in terms of our corporate governance protocols, we will investigate all instances of those. So there are a lot. One of the things that we found, for instance, in reporting some of the matters to the board, is that a lot of allegations get made, but only about 15% of allegations that get made are actually true. There's a lot of unfounded allegations as well. That are there, but we deal with all of them so that there is no matter that we do not deal with. In as far as issues around any balances that we may have within Transnet of monies that don't belong to us but in our custody, we do not have that within Transnet itself. There may be in some of the pension funds, which are a separate entity from Transnet, may be those kinds of issues. We also are dealing with a number of those, but through the pension fund and not Transnet itself, on a number of those claims where various things take place in terms of retired employees. We do keep an asset register. We have a very comprehensive register of the assets of Transnet and properties all over the country. We did a fixed asset register project that was finished, I think, last year or 18 months ago. So in terms of the close to 400 billion worth of properties and assets of Transnet, we know where each and every one of these are. There are also certain and particular challenges with regard to certain of our assets, in as far as some of the former TPVC assets that we have in terms of treatment and how we will deal with them. So the national government, provinces and municipalities and Transnet are also seized with some of these matters in order for us to be able to understand better how we will treat some of these assets going forward. Transnet does have a disposal of assets policy. In a lot of the policies, if we have to dispose of assets of the state, ministerial approval is almost always sought in order for us to be able to alienate some of those properties. There was a question around the depreciation policy. The depreciation policy that we follow is one that relates to the IFRS standards. In general, the assets of Transnet, they last for many years, between 30 to 100 years. So the depreciation policy follows that, but on a 2 to 3 year basis, there's always a valuation in terms of the IFRS standards itself. Is the GCE an inventory holder of the assets? As the accounting officer of the entity, I have overall view in terms of the issues relating to the entity itself, and report to the accounting authority as well as the executive authority on matters related thereto. The vacancy rate in Transnet is very low. We don't have vacancies in the executive. I think what becomes important, Chair, is that when you've got leadership stability, you are able to deal with a lot of the issues. It is when you have vacancies at the level of the leadership that entities then tend to have a lot of vacancies. So we do fill in vacancies as and when they're required. We have had occasion in the past to declare moratorium on certain types of vacancies, but they are almost always non-safety critical and non-operations critical. But also we continue to look at ways in terms of how we can optimize the use of resources. Importantly, we look at shared services and some of the recurring and transactional services, and we begin to look at how best we can optimize the use of our people. We do have leave provision, which is about 700 million in our books. That leave is leave that is due to employees. Part of the manner and way in which we manage those is we try and make sure that we reduce the amount of leave. We encourage our employees to take that leave. Some employees have got leave of 40 to 60 days, and we're saying over the next 3 years, there's a program that we've agreed with our unions in terms of how best to deal with that so that we can bring down the number of the leave. And also with the management, we We have indicated to the managers that we will not be paying leave. We want to encourage people to take their leave so that they can rest and also be with their family. So that is also important. In as far as the accountability on funds that are donated, we do have a very robust and rigorous policy in terms of our Transnet Foundation, in terms of how we make sure and follow up that funds are used for the purposes for which they're intended to be used. We follow and we've got people on the ground in the Transnet Foundation who make sure that we receive paperwork, but also they follow some of those projects to make sure that funds that are dispersed from Transnet are not abused. The issues around Saldanha, yes, Saldanha is a national growth point, iron ore being one of the key issues, but also we've talked about the notion of oil and gas being critical in that particular area. In the past 2 years, we've experienced a little bit of problems in terms of the gas and ore sector, in terms of the kind of investments that we thought could take place there. We are involved with the Saldanha Bay IDZ. We have currently finalized a lease agreement of about 35 hectares on land near the port where we are hard at work in terms of dealing with those particular issues. So they will be commencing soon, as we understand it, in terms of placing earth-moving equipment on site, because the site access has now been granted by the port. This will be for the development and preparation for the site for future entrance within the IDZ lease area. So I think we're comfortable that there's a lot of work that is being done there. We have also, in the Saldanha area, spent about 16 million on the stadium. There's a new stadium that has been built in and around there. 8 million by Transnet, another 8 million by the municipality. There's very good cooperative governance between us and the municipality in terms of the particular issues related to Saldanha. We will look at further cooperation in terms of the indoor sports within that area. It's one of the critical areas within Transnet, which is designated as an area where we need to do more, because we need to retain our employees in Saldanha. A lot of the employees, they'll go and work in Saldanha for 1 or 2 years and then they want to go somewhere else because of facilities. So Transnet, especially through the Transnet National Ports Authority, has made some very good investments to make sure that we have integration in as far as the people and the community in that area, especially in the area of sport. In as far as market share contestation, I think there's a titanic battle that is taking place between road and rail in terms of our quest to continue to have market penetration, especially in the GFP area. As indicated, in the year to the end of March 2017, there was a 24.1% improvement and increase in rail cargo, especially in the space of containers and automotive, which we believe is actually very good for us. Gary will prepare himself to talk a lot more about the BE procurement spend, what the 103% means, and also to deal with issues, how we make sure that we avoid fronting. I will continue a little bit on some of the TNPA issues. A matter was raised around the storage facilities. I think it's instructive, Chair, that we indicate to the committee that a lot of the
the leases that the National Ports Authority had entered into with traditional white firms have in fact come to an end. What that means is the rights to those leases are now reverting to the state via Transnet National Ports Authority. And we've come up with the notion of how the National Ports Authority, through the Ports Act and acting as a change agent, can assist us in terms of making sure that going forward that black participants can come through, especially in the area in Durban around what we call the Island View Storage, where we're indicating that we're looking at between 51% and 74% of black people participating in the new facilities. So traditionally we've owned only the land, but the improvements now, they are reverting to the National Ports Authority. There's a process that is taking place in terms of quantifying the new values and therefore the new rental. But also importantly, we want to use this opportunity for black people to come in so that we can give expression to the principle of radical economic transformation, especially in that sector. So we assist with the Department of Energy, the Department of Transport, and public enterprises to deal with this particular matter. So that certain Section 56 processes and Section 79 processes take place in there. We are saying that Section 79 can easily take place if we can be able to audit and assess that the level of black participation is far above 51%. In fact, we are saying that as a first pass, 74% should be the minimum. In some of those areas. So there's very dynamic and interesting discussions that are taking place there so that we give expression to radical economic transformation. In as far as access to coal, I just want to correct the perception. The issue on coal is not access to wagons from Transnet. By BE entities. The issue is key wall access at the port. As you know, there is the traditional cartel of the Richards Bay Coal Terminal, which is the RBCT, that allocates the use of that facility to entities that are members of the RBCT, which have made it traditionally difficult for black economic empowerment entities to participate in this, which is why there's a new entity in the form of RPTG that is closely working with Greenrod and the black empowerment entity that is assisting in terms of trying to bring in junior miners. There's also ongoing discussions with the RPCT to set aside a further 5% of the capacity of that terminal to triple BEE, and I think that discussion has gone very well, which will assist us in terms of...
Sorry for interrupting this, and I'm behind the pillar. Oh. I just want, because it's just mentioning Greenrod. Can you, while you're there, tell us who is Greenrod? Because I thought you were talking of the... And what do they do in the whole Richards Bay terminal?
Can you finish that? You thought you were talking about...
No. I thought you were trying to deal with the issue of transforming the whole Richards Bay terminal. But now I hear a private company called Greenrod. Yeah. Who is Greenrod? What is their participation in the whole new arrangement? Especially because it's talking that now we're trying to get another allocation where black companies can participate. But I hear another established Greenrod. What is their participation?
I'll clarify, Chair. Thank you very much. There are two terminals that deal with coal in Richards Bay. There is the RBCT, which is the traditional terminal that is run by the traditional Anglo Glencore South 32, BHP, Billiton, Sasol, and others. in there, there's 81 million tons of coal that can be moved over the quay. In that, there's also an entity called Quattro, which we assigned 4 million tons to black entities. We've said what we'd like to see, there is an additional 5% being given to black entities. That has been agreed to, which has been a Transnet initiative. We are now in the process of trying to get more black entities to have access to the RBCT. And RBCT is also thinking about what they call phase six, which can give more access to black entities. So that's one set of issues. The second terminal is a black entity-owned terminal, which is in a joint venture with Grindrod. Grindrod is in is obviously in the traditional space. It's a traditional entity which also has very good black economic empowerment credentials. But in the main, that new terminal, which we hope will grow to 20 million tons, is a black-led terminal. There are discussions for Grindrod to also reduce their own shareholding in that particular one. Currently, Grindrod is at about 40%, and the black entity has got 60%. There are discussions to reduce that. And it was always important, I think, as it starts, that there is some kind of facilitation that was required. But I think as we move forward, you will see that RBTG gaining more and more black empowerment. At the moment, I think it's around 60% BE and about 40% Grindrod. I stand to be corrected. But there is moves to deal with that. That will have about 20 million tons, Chair. We want the junior miners to then, because there's a lot of them that have been given mining licenses, we want them to grow and for them to make investments so that they can export some of the coal while also supplying some of it to the domestic market, notably to Eskom. So if we then move on, so I'm saying there's ongoing transformation that is taking place. It's not where it ought to be, but I think there's some progress in as far as that is concerned. The issue of the Gupta leaks and Waxmans, I'm going to, after Gary, allow the chair of the Audit Committee of Transnet to deal with the Waxmans report so that we can also get a progress report in as far as where are we with that particular issue. You are correct, Honourable Member, when you say that the 58,000 to 62,000 employees would sometimes feel betrayed when they read about what seems to have happened in the newspapers. So we try to continue to engage the employees to indicate to them that the investigations are ongoing. Sometimes we also hold the notion that people are innocent until they're proven guilty. We communicate with them, and it's our intention, as we indicated, that as the outcomes of these investigations come to bear, we implement those outcomes. We also share with the employees in terms of what is happening so that they are kept abreast. To make sure that there is no one who feels any uncertainty as a result of some of the reports that have taken place. And I will, in a short while, just give a little bit of progress in terms of some of those issues. In as far as industrialization is concerned, especially inland capacity, our branch line strategy aims to make sure that there's local economic development, especially in small and remote towns. We are trying to revive rail in a number of areas in our country, ranging from Musina to Mangaung to Umtata to places like Amabele to Sterkspruit. where the you know the coal mining capacity there is being revived. We're looking at how to take some of that through the port of Nuha and through the port of East London to make sure that where rail can make a positive impact in terms of the local economic development in those communities, that it in fact does so. So there's a number of investments. There's about 5 or 6 branch lines that are in the pipeline. There's also a number that have already been approved, like the Sirius line. We are re-looking at the Chuchu line next to Naizna. There's another line next to Grahamstown, which is also being revived, as well as lines that support agriculture in the Free State, and also forestry in and around the Mpangeni area that have already been revived. But there's a number of new lines that we are dealing with. In terms of the capital investment program, as indicated, 145 billion rand has been spent. The job creation contribution by Transnet to the economy is close to 600,000 as a result of that. There has been a job creation contribution to Transnet itself, especially during the construction periods. But what is important is the kind of investment that takes place, and the multiplier in the economy is up to between 7 and 8 times as a result of the investment that Transnet makes. We will clarify also for you the issues around the debt repayment. We've indicated that we repaid 24 billion rand during the period and borrowed 17 billion. So the net impact is a reduction of 7 billion rand of the amounts. What I'd like Gary to do also in his submission is to talk a little bit about the 29.1 billion rand, which is was subject to guarantees and certain rating agency triggers, which we have renegotiated subsequent to the March 2017 year end, because we've always anticipated that if there were to be further downgrades in the economy, if you look at those triggers, it becomes important for the organization that we are not exposed. So, Honorable Member, we've been dealing with that. Gary will indicate to you how we'll deal with that. The well-known Molatwane Dikete, who's our spokesperson, sits behind me. He will talk about the communication strategy of Transnet and how we intend to actually upgrade that and make information about Transnet much more visible going forward. In terms of artisanal training programs and engineering, we think that Transnet is a center of excellence in terms of railway engineering works. And in fact, we work very closely with a number of the engineering schools in the University of Cape Town on mechanical engineering, the University of Johannesburg on civil, the University of Pretoria on signaling. And in fact, we sponsor chairs of engineering in those institutions that assist us in terms of our ongoing drive in both maritime as well as railway engineering in those schools. But we also have the railway engineering, the railway operations, the maritime academies within Transnet, where we take in a number of artisans. What we've always said and what we maintain is that we train more than we need at Transnet, so that we train for the economy. So you'll find us taking 1,500 to train per annum.
But we as Transnet ourselves, we probably need about 300. Some of the problems that have now taken place in the economy is that the youngsters that we've taken in and trained and developed, we always said to them that we're developing their skills for the economy. Once they have the skills, they need to go out there and create jobs. Some of them, they want to find jobs. In an economy that is contracting, it's difficult to find jobs. So if we are training you to be a welder, some of these skills have become very scarce. Welders, plumbers, these are very scarce skills. People can make a lot of money. I think now in Johannesburg, just the call-out fee for a plumber is between 800 rand to 1,000 rand before they come to you, and you are not likely to find them on the day that you need them. They have 2 to 3 days, sort of. So these are some of the skills that some of our young people were trying to train them in, but I think with the advent of the digital economy, everybody wants computer-based training and very little to do with some of the artisanal skills. So there's a lot of work, I think, in terms of what we call the X and Y generation that we need to work on. We need, for instance, diesel mechanics for diesel locomotives. It's very difficult to find a young person who wants to become a diesel mechanic. But these locomotives, they're going to be there for the next 30 years. We need these kinds of skills going forward. In terms of variation of salaries and processes in Transnet, we have come from an era where each of the different divisions in Transnet have been doing different things. The sizes of jobs are not necessarily the same in each of the divisions. So people will say that people are doing exactly the same jobs. Sometimes it's not necessarily true. But yes, we do also, we used to have allowances, that additional allowances that we give in certain areas of the country where it is difficult to attract people to go there, where you would give some type of allowance in order to retain and recruit people there. There is currently an exercise in what we call Transnet 4.0, which is about integrating the greater Transnet, where we're saying that within job families, we want the range in terms of where it starts and where it ends to try and contract those so that the variation is not too great. But obviously, one of the things that continues to be a challenge, young people who come into a job family have to start the job at the lower level. You can't start, if you've got 8 years experience, you can't be paid the same with somebody who's got 6 months experience. But the prevailing narrative around young people, they say, we're doing the same job, why do you pay me less? Because there's some impatience in terms of understanding that once you have more skill and you have more experience, obviously, the more time you've spent in the same job, you will be paid better than the person who is just coming in. So there are those issues that we're dealing with. So that one is more of what I would call state of mind issues that we need to deal with. In as far as the SEP investigation is concerned, that investigation is complete. We liaised with SEP last week where they've given us a copy of the findings, and we allowed them to do their part so that we could understand. There is no finding of wrongdoing against Transnet in as far as the SEP investigation is concerned. There is no employee of Transnet that was paid any commission as a result of them having given certain contracts with SAP. In fact, it was always amazing to us, and to me in particular, that SAP has been in a business relationship with Transnet for more than 21 years. But in 2014 and 15, they start to pay commission for work that they get in Transnet. The ERP system of Transnet runs on SAP. And without SAP, there's some difficulty for Transnet to run its own systems. In fact, when I say there's some difficulty, I am downplaying the importance of SAP in terms of the integrated nature of our operations. Well, even as we are beginning to say, how do we deal with this particular issue? If we were to blacklist SAP, what would that mean to Transnet? There is a risk issue related to that. So we worked very closely with them. They found that three or four of their own employees, they broke the rules of SAP or SAP, and they started paying commissions to certain entities. One entity is called Cat House. The other entity is called GSS. Cat House is an unknown entity within Transnet. GSS has done some work in terms of IT resource services on SAP. The last payment that we had made to GSS was around April 2015, which was around about 7 million that has been paid over 2 to 3 years within Transnet. We are then looking at how do we make sure that we blacklist these entities. The Cat Houses, I've indicated, they've never done any business with us, but they are part of the investigation that we are doing, and I think we are at quite an advanced stage in terms of understanding who these people are. What we did find, for instance, was that there was a person by the name of Chobi, who is a director of Cat House, and that same person had signed the Zestilo contract at Transnet. So these findings that will be made that we will share with you. As we've said, we're at 95-96% of that, so we know some of the information in terms of the tree that we've created to try and find a sense of the complex web in terms of some of the IT related issues that have been dealt with. Business leadership South Africa has never suspended Transnet's membership as they contend. Transnet on its own, as part of our frugal approach to cost management, decided that there was no need and no value in Transnet being a member of Business Leadership South Africa. 2 months prior, we decided that we would not renew our membership of Business Leadership. When Business Leadership received our letter that we would not renew, they then started some grandstanding parade, and they went to the media and they said they've suspended Transnet's membership. How do you suspend someone who's just written to you and told you that we no longer wish to continue to be your member? So we have no intention of paying 1.6 million rand membership to Business Leadership going forward. The issue around our debt and how much is guaranteed, Gary will deal with this.
I just want to indicate that when you have a tender within Transnet, we have a number of people that deal with those tenders. We have cross-functional teams. In the 1064 alone, I'm told there were more than 150 people that were involved in the adjudication of these tenders. Some of them would just deal with what is called the technical aspect. Some of them deal with the BEE aspect. Others deal with supplier development. Others deal with local content. And there are gate reviews in terms of any entity that wants to do business with Transnet. You have to first find out whether they technically qualify before they go to the next level. The next level might be BEE. I think Gary might be able to take us through some of this. And then the final gate that we enter is the price gate, to say, okay, now that you have done all of these things, what is your price? What does it look like before you get an award? We do have a report on the person of Iqbal Sharma, who was a previous board member of Transnet. That person, I think, retired or resigned from the Transnet board in 2014. There had been an investigation that board had raised in as far as what had been reported in the newspapers alongside an entity called VR Laser, that director had an interest in, to get a sense of what kind of conflict was there, whether that conflict had been declared. I must say up front that Transnet's policy is not to allow board members or its employees to do Transnet to do business with Transnet, but that where that is there is the declaration of conflict process that is there, which assists us in terms of how we manage conflicts. But as a general rule, it's inappropriate for Transnet employees or directors to do business with Transnet, because you can't have an appropriate fiduciary responsibility if you have this kind of conflict, where on the one hand you are working for Transnet and on the other hand you want to do business with Transnet. So we've dealt with that, I think, over a number of years, where I think also the Department of Public Service and Administration, and also through government's monitoring mechanisms, they would come to us and they would say, there is this employee of Transnet who has this business and who tendered. Some time ago, we declared that it's inappropriate and it's not allowed for Transnet employees to do business with Transnet. I think it's several years ago. But we also used the conflict, the declaration of conflicts process to try and manage those, so that if there were people who have conflicts, they can be recused when those things sort of happen. So I will allow at a point the chair of the board to indicate and talk a little bit more about some of the vacancies on the board and what the discussions with the ministry in as far as those are concerned. In terms of KPIs, it's been quite interesting, because at the beginning of the year, when you do your corporate plan, the certain assumptions that you make. Corporate plans are started from October to about February of the following year for the year starting in April. So you have to finalize your corporate plan in February, and then in April the year will start. And in the past 3 or 4 years, there's a lot of things that happen subsequent to corporate plans being adopted, which are well known and documented. Those things relate to commodity prices. We now talk not only about the Great Depression of 1932, we also talk about the Great Recession of 2008. We also talk about the commodity price squeeze of 2015. We also talk about the Red October of 2014. So there's a lot of, some of you are old enough to understand some of the discussions where people have been saying, what will be the nature of the shape of the recession curve? Is it going to be U-shaped? Is it going to be L-shaped? So there's been a lot of these discussions because the economy has just been so unpredictable in the past few years to deal with it. So where there's been allegations, do we put a moratorium? I think it's an important point because we do not want that one, if you are losing money, that you continue to lose money. But at the same time, sometimes you are still dealing with a suspicion. The good thing about most of these entities is that they are huge entities on themselves. So if Transnet needed to have recourse to them in the future, it's not going to be difficult for Transnet to have that recourse. And in fact, a lot of these entities, we hold guarantees as Transnet from them, which range from different amounts, but in the billions of rands. I think it's about 10% of each of the contracts, at least as a minimum. So if there was anything that was happening, we do have guarantees in Transnet, which we have recourse to via their banks, where we would say to them, look, you've been naughty, you've done 1, 2, 3, we're going to blacklist you, but we're also going to take this money from your bank. So we've allowed some of these contracts to continue. Part of the difficulties, obviously, as I have said, Transnet has got valid contracts with these entities. We pay them in terms of the contract. If there's then something else that happens beyond the payment that we have made behind the closed curtain in a foreign country, we need our criminal investigation units, we need the Reserve Bank to pierce that veil so that we can understand what happens beyond that. And they are mostly in a better space to assist us in terms of how do we deal with those particular issues. The Free State accident, obviously there, I think that was the Shosholoza mail train, which is a Prasa, which went through a truck that, as we understand it, illegally crossed the railway crossing, which resulted in the death of more than 21 people. So yes, Transnet was not involved there, safe to indicate that the network near Kronstadt, where it happened, it does belong to Transnet. I think the issues around the shareholder compact and the achievement of KPIs, the department will also probably deal with those issues. Safe to say, as I've indicated, that as and when we have tried to make sure that in terms of the shareholder compact, we achieve those. There have also been these issues that the assumptions that had been made as a result of a dynamic economy then began to change. And one of the discussions we've been having with the TPE is, what do you do, for instance, if you look at the MTSF? In 2014, when the MTSF started, there were particular projections. Everybody talked about growth rates of between 4 and 5% in the economy. That is what the MTSF is predicated on. But what actually happened is we've grown between 0.6% and 1.3%. Huge differential in terms of the 4 to 5% growth trajectory that was assumed. And therefore, the extent to which as a country we could achieve the MTSF was severely hindered as a result of the economy. But nevertheless, I think we've made progress in as far as some of those issues are concerned. So I'm going to allow the following people through you, Chair, to make some additional comments. The CFO must also talk about our audit, our engagement with the Auditor General, how the external auditors work with us and the Auditor General. The involvement thereof, I think, is an important aspect that we need to deal with. The issue of the debt, how we are servicing it, and the 29.1 billion, 24 billion repayment, and the 17 billion that was raised, and the issues around triple BEE. That was raised. I will also then ask that the General Manager of Corporate Communications, Mr. Molatwane, the indefatigable Molatwane declared, must talk to the communication strategy. I will ask the Audit Committee Chair to talk about Waxman's. Nonkululeko Sishi, who has joined us to talk about the different schools and the engineering prowess of Transnet and Eskom and how we are dealing with those issues. The pension fund issue is a bit sensitive at the moment because we are in closed discussions with the trustees of the pension funds. I would not want us to discuss that in any great detail, save to say that those discussions continue and we're at a very sensitive stage now to try and deal with the issues. I must indicate to the committee that probably in a closed session of the committee we could deal with this particular issue. It's not a matter. The pension fund. So if we had a closed session of the committee, we could deal with that particular issue. it's just sensitive and tricky, I think, at this point. And then I will ask the chairperson of the board to then close with the issue of the board vacancies. I know that some of it I've dealt with it at a high level, but I think members, if they want to ask additional questions, we are there.
The management will follow all management of ESCOM, and then thereafter the board member will come in, and then the chair will close, will wrap up with the responses, and then allow the department to come in. Thank you very much. In that order. Hey, Transnet. Hey, when in fairness, in Jalo Nanda, we must come often.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair Suyu, and thank you, Mr. Gama. The first matter that I will deal with is just around Saldana and the question around the amount of spend. So yes, you're correct. For the next 7 years, we do anticipate to spend 8.9 billion rand on various aspects of the iron ore line, including obviously rail, engineering, maintenance, as well as port infrastructure. But also, just to respond to what we said we were going to do and what we've done, in the year 14-15, we spent 951.9 million rand in that area on the iron ore line. In the year 15-16, we spent 1.4185 billion. And then year 16-17, we spent 772 million rand, and that totaled 3.143 billion rand. And that comprises of a number of different acquisitions, upgrades, port equipment, rail infrastructure equipment, which we could give you the breakdown of. But that really is the actual spend for that first, that three-year period since we spoke to you and provided you with a projection over a seven-year period. So if you think 3 billion over the 3 years, and we had around 8 billion, 8.5 over the 7 years, you can kind of equate that as well. And yes, we do plan to spend 8.9 over the next 7 years. So that's on the Saldana matter. In terms of the BEE spend is over 100%. The way that the BEE spend works is that per the DTI codes, you have to account for all your spend, and you basically work it out against your BEE levels. So if you are spending with a BEE level 9, which is the lowest one, if you spend 10 rand, you get zero to your BEE spend. If you spend with a BEE level 8, you get 10% of that. So if you spend 10 rand, you get 1 rand allocated to your BEE spend. If you spend with level 4 and up, you get 100% up of what you've spent. So if you spent 100 rand with level 4, you will get 100 rand BEE spend. If you spent 100 rand with level 1, you'll get 135 rand recognition. So Transnet has spent 103% of its total spend. Its total spend for the 16-17 year was 36 billion rand. In fact, it was 35.8. Our recognized spend was 36.956, and I've reported the 37 billion rand.
You have only 10 minutes to...
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Spend with black-owned businesses was 12.2 billion rand, representing 34% of total measurable spend. Spend with black woman-owned businesses was 4.6 billion rand, which represents 12.81% of total spend. We also spent with EMEs 2.78 billion rand, representing 7.74% of total spend, and with QSEs 2.76 billion rand, representing 7.7%. Incidentally, these all exceeded the shareholders' compact KPI targets for the company. Additionally, in terms of fronting, we take it very seriously. We have over 27,000 vendors, so it's very difficult to go and audit every single one. But the way that we do it is we apply due diligence processes over the BEE certification. Obviously, they have to have a valid BEE certificate, so already there's a verification. Additionally, we look at other risk factors like, do they have real black ownership? We go to the share register. We actually go visit the companies to see if it is a company, if the shareholders are involved, are they getting remunerated, are they technically involved with the business and the running of the business, do they have a knowledge of the business so that they're not just fronting with white-owned type businesses. If we find that there's any malice, we will blacklist the organization, we will report them to the relevant authorities, including the National Treasury, so that they can be blacklisted on the entire database for government. Just moving on to the, you'll give me a moment, the triple PFA evergreen contracts. We don't have evergreen contracts at Transnet. We do try and encourage black-owned businesses to come in. Obviously, we are bound by the limitations of the triple PFA and the National Treasury Instruction Notes, which say that you can decree a certain minimum level of BEE and that you can subcontract to designated groups 30%. But obviously we have ideas around how we could actually create set-asides and really, really focus on transformation of specific industries like Transnet did in external audit and internal audit. And in the new procurement bill, we will be proposing certain changes to have more aggressive transformation and empowerment initiatives in the procurement processes. Just in terms of the 24.9 billion and the 17 billion, we repaid 17 billion, we raised 17 billion of new debt, okay, through bonds, development finance institutions, banks, etc. We repaid debt, not interest, debt of 24.9. that resulted in a reduction of our debt of 7.9 billion rand, which was seen as a positive with the rating agencies, especially in the economic environment, as well as our investors. On the 29.1 billion rand, that was the total that we renegotiated of all our debt. Our debt, one of the questions was how much? We have about 125 billion rand worth of debt. And of that 125, yes, approximately 125, I can give you the exact number. We have exactly, at the end of the financial year, 124.78 billion rand of debt. And of that, 30.1 billion rand had triggers for rating agencies. So when South Africa was downgraded, we then had a trigger in our loan covenants, which meant that we would have to give a government guarantee or immediately repay. And as I explained to the committee, if you repay one, you repay everything. That creates a big, big problem for the country. So we renegotiated way before any downgrade, and we gave them our view of our credit risk.
5 minutes left.
They looked at our credit risk. They were very comfortable with it, and they therefore then renegotiated the rating triggers. So we avoided asking the government for government guarantees. Another question was, how many government guarantees? The last government guarantee was in 1998-1999. That was for a value of 3.5 billion rand. And as I said, that's against a total debt of 125 billion rand. Lastly, just to finalize, on the audit, yes, we work very closely with the Auditor General and the external auditors, SNG. The Auditor General is involved in the planning. They attend every single audit committee. They also attend audit meetings with ourselves and the external auditors, and alone with the external auditors. They give steps that are required for the external auditors, and the AG also runs their own steps and their computer-assisted audit techniques. And we keep involved with them, and they obviously supervise external audit. In fact, even in the compliance issues that we deal with, AG obviously then gives their view and finalizes that. And Chair, the last one was, we said, there was a comment you made that we are happy to pay more interest to reduce the debt. Just to rephrase it, we're not happy to pay more interest to anybody. Okay, we don't like paying more interest.
Okay.
But we prefer to pay interest rather than asking the government for government guarantees.
Okay.
To assist the sovereign. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Transnet for some time has embarked on a what we call below the line approach, which simply implies that we let our good stories speak for themselves or sell themselves to the public. We also know that these good stories are more believable. But with the current situation that Transnet finds itself, we realized that we had to change the gear. As a result, we have now embarked on what we call above-the-line approach, which simply means that we have to make sure that we pay a little bit to make sure that our stories are not lost. And we do that, amongst others, to make sure that our over 50,000 men and women employees are not demotivated because they put so much in making sure that their company is kept above the waters. As a result of now embarking on this particular approach, we have embarked on the following initiatives, amongst others. One of them is the billboards that we are using to tell our stories of hope and success. You will see the billboards that are showing that Transnet embraces technology, that Transnet is also being digital for it to survive. Also that we are embracing the young and old. We're trying to give hope also to our above 45 employees that Transnet does not throw you away on the basis of your age, but we realize that there is still a value that you have to add, and also make sure that we bridge the gap between the young and the old, because the young also come in thinking that they have all the answers. You will also see that Transnet cares about the communities in which it operates. One of the examples is through the pillow paper. Women empowerment is critical. Billboards will be seen. We have used them before, some of them, to ensure and encourage women that they also have a space in as far as Transnet is concerned. Also, our intention of infiltrating Africa. You'll see that even 2-3 weeks ago, we went to Zimbabwe, where we delivered some rolling stock there. And that story did make rounds, but if you compare it with it, that cloud above our heads of state capture. All state capture stories tend to get more attention than all these good stories that we are trying to share with the country and beyond the borders. We also have TV and radio ads. As I'm talking to you, we have radio ads that are running throughout the country, which are talking about job and procurement scams that are doing rounds in the country. Many people get robbed trying, being told that they should pay a particular amount to get jobs from Transnet, and we are dealing with those through our ads. We also have internally what we call our one magazine, which we share within Transnet. We also share it with this particular committee on a monthly basis. About 40 copies get sent here to make sure that our story does not only end up within Transnet itself. And internally, we also, depending on the issues, we also go to what we call site visits by our group leadership team. When the issue is critical, we also have our group CE having a broadcast. Issues like the Werfmann story, it is also on our agenda. He is about to talk to them again, where we're saying broadcast is much better because we connect to all the centers throughout the country of Transnet, allow the employees to make sure that they interact and engage with him live, where he can provide all the necessary answers, and also give them assurance that we are doing what needs to be done. Taking into account the time limit, Madam Chair, I think I'll pause here.
Nonku?
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon. I will talk on the different schools of excellence that we as Transnet provide. We have different schools of excellence. As the Group CE has explained, that we train far more than we are able to permanently employ or offer employment within our services. We have a Maritime School of Excellence, which is a school that provides marine-related training, and a School of Rail, which trains train drivers and all train-related or rail-related training, School of Pipeline for pipeline-related, School of Engineering that is mostly around artisan training. Then we also have a School of Leadership, which provides management training. But we also offer what we called YPTs, Young People in Training, opportunities, which is commonly known as graduates in training. We have about 720 of those graduates in training. But in the past 5 years, in our schools, we have trained about 18,533 youth that have come through our schools. We offer accountants in training. We offer learnerships. We offer internships within our employment. There was also a question around how can one become a train driver, or how does one get into registering in our schools as artisan. We advertise around November for admission in March, and we also we advertise twice a year, and we also advertise around May. So we advertise in all newspapers for those that can qualify and get into the programs that we have. Most of our programs, they require students to have English and science to be able to get into the program. But there are programs that don't really require English and science. But during the course of the year, we advertise in the newspapers. Thank you.
Diesel and mechanism, does it require English? And I mean, sorry, everything requires English. But maths, does it require maths?
Yes, it does. Yeah. Maths and science is a requirement. But we advertise during the course of the year, we specify what are the requirements that are there for each and every program.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just in the interest of time, the 1064... Thank you very much. The 1064 locomotive investigation report by Watchmen's was given to the audit committee and the board mid-December, and that report was deliberated upon during January as the audit committee of Transnet is seized with the responsibility of the whole 1064 investigation in respect of the terms of reference which were provided to Worksmen's, and to ensure that there is a proper investigation as according to what is required in terms of our transit policies. The report was presented to us, as I've indicated, in January, but the report was in all material aspects incomplete and inconclusive in that it has made four recommendations, which three of them we have basically implemented. One of that recommendation was that that matters that require subpoena powers be given to Commission of Inquiry, and then we have filtered all of those matters that can be referred to Commission of Inquiry accordingly. And Transnet has got a process internally via our oversight to make sure that all those matters that require Commission of Inquiry are actually presented to Commission of Inquiry on state capture. The report also says we should do a further investigation as it was incomplete itself because of certain limitations around subpoena powers and also around documentations which was not forthcoming from witnesses and also from certain sources. And Transnet Board via the Audit Committee has instituted a further forensic investigation on all these matters that require a further perusal investigation. And we are anticipating that investigation to be completed by the next 2.5 months. The report also says we should do undertake or report certain matters to law enforcement agencies. Transnet has done that already in November, and all those matters are presented to our steering committee or the audit committee of Transnet on a regular basis. We're getting feedback on all those. The report also says we should suspend certain people within Transnet, but it did not give us a list of the people that need to be suspended. Neither did it give us grounds of suspension as per the GCE presentation earlier. There's 150 people who were involved in the adjudication of 1064, and the report was very silent about the names. So therefore, we could not suspend anybody in respect of around this investigation, pending a further investigation which is currently underway. And I think that's in the main what Worksmen's report has basically reported to us. We have made that report available to our investors. We have set up a data room in the Carlton Center, and investors have got access to that report on subject to certain non-disclosure agreement being signed, and the access in the report. We are very transparent around this report, and we remain guided by its recommendations, and we have followed all the recommendations to the letter. And I think that's, in the interest of time, that's what I can report, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you. When you say Commission of Inquiry, are you referring to the Judicial Commission?
Judicial Commission of Inquiry State Capture. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Because of time, I'll just run through this. Our board, currently, we are sitting with eight non-executive board members and two executive board members. But we are still short of skills. We are short of a freight logistics, which is an engineer. We are short of someone with the capital management skills and someone with a project costing specialist and an economist. I'm too fast. Okay, I'm too fast. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm saying currently we have 8 non-executive board members and 2 executive board members comprises of the GCFO and the GCO. Of the skills that we have in the board, we are in shortage of 4 skills, which is freight logistics and engineer, capital management, project costing, and economist. That was the question. Thank you.
Department?
Honourable Chair and members, thank you very much. I think as the chairperson has alighted,
have
because
only
of
10 minutes.
I'll try by all means to at least save the 5 minutes, Chair. The chairperson has actually outlined key issues in as far as the reports that the department needs to bring to this committee. And we have taken note of all those requirements, and the report will not only just touch on Transnet, but across all the SOCs that are within the portfolio of the department. The minister will also be shared the notes that we have taken, and the issues, questions and concerns that members have raised. We'll also table that with the minister to ensure that at least we propose possible dates that we can then bring the reports that will then touch on the performance in as far as KPIs are concerned, the alignment of their performance in as far as NDP and MTSF. So I've taken quite a number of notes on all the issues, including the questions that members have raised. So when we propose the date to come and report on those performance, we'll then share with you the templates of how the reports will be structured so that at least the committee members see all the issues that they've requested that the department adheres to it. So the minister and the DG will therefore lead that delegation in presenting those coming here. We'll request that at least we do that as soon as possible. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for all the responses by the Transnet and the department. We take note of the request made by the GCE of in committee session to make those important reports regarding pension fund and the other one that you said regarding the certain investigations, and we'll try and make time for that as soon as we can. And then the other program that is going to follow that will be quite urgent is talking to the new budget, which is 2018-2019. So you'll have, unfortunately, we have to come back very soon for that. Having said that, I think, members, all your questions have been answered. And I take that this was a good meeting, considering that we have not been meeting with Transnet for over 2 years. Really? I was told, besides the meeting on the 30th of January, that all the the department came with all the entities, but on one-to-one, the committee and the entity, it has been about 2 years, and I think we have done well, thanks to the that the House only started 3 today, but members are free now to have, I must release them for their lunch and some relax. Thank you very much for coming, and to our guests as well. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned. Welcome. Okay.